Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Down in Front. Our movie this week is Strange Days.
Most peculiar, Mama.
It's a creepy movie. It's a horror movie, Strange Days. It's a movie.
It's a thriller.
Blade Runner 2, even better. Go ahead and pop in your DVD or Blu-ray. We're watching it on Netflix. Press play, press pause. When the 20th Century Fox logo fades to black, the first thing we perceive of all black, press pause. Then in a second, I will say 3, 2, 1, and pause, at which point I'll press play, and you'll press play, and we'll watch the movie together in perfect sync.
And we'll be jacked in and wired in, and we'll be wire-tripping together.
It'll be like any other commentary, except, of course, this week
no
with
blackjack.
Four friends in your head. Myself, as always, Steve Christie. My friend Brian...
Oh, William, no.
Brian William Weber.
Start again.
Hello.
Eric Webb.
Thank you. Hello.
I got your name right. And Michael Dorkman Scott.
Yeah. No. but I'm playing back Michael's life right now in my head, so it's like I'm Michael.
Strange Days is one of those
movies. I'm Trey
Stokes,
by the way.
That's
just for
Stokes.
Those keeping
Trey
track
Stokes.
At home.
It's Trey the Amazing Stokes.
Yeah.
It's one of those movies that people have been telling me to see forever. And somehow it's just the name Strange Days didn't stick in my head.
It doesn't tell you what it is at all.
Right.
You have no idea what it is.
So even though people have been telling me to see it forever, when I saw it on Netflix, I saw Strange Days, and I was like, okay, well, it's got a high rating, and it's directed by Kathryn Bigelow. Okay, I'm gonna watch this movie. It didn't occur to me that this is a movie that people have been telling me to see, because I just didn't remember the name Strange Days, because it's a strange name. And the movie blew me away. I just wasn't expecting it, and I enjoyed the shit out of it. And the entire time, I was running comparisons in my mind to Blade Runner, and I really, really, really enjoyed this movie. And I don't really enjoy Blade Runner as much as I think I'm supposed to. I think Blade Runner is pretty, but I don't actually like the story so much as I like Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep. And this movie blew my wee mind. It's also like top to bottom filled with nipples, which is a big deal for me.
Yeah. I imagine we're going to hear a lot about that.
And
oh, joy.
It's cool. The weirdest thing is watching... Oh, shit. What's Voldemort's name?
Ralph Fiennes?
Is it Ralph Fiennes?
Yeah.
Ralph, yeah.
This is a weird characterization. And it took me most of the movie to get used to him being who he is in this, because it's a little hard to pin him down, but we'll talk about that as we get into it. But on the whole, I love this movie. Ryan, Strange Days?
A little similar experience to yours, except, you know, you said people have been telling you to watch it, like, forever. For me, somehow I had never heard of this movie before until, you know, Trey was like, hey, Strange Days, that's one we gotta do. And then she's like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, okay, well. And then we're recording down in front here in my apartment today and needed a guest to fill in. And so I said, okay, I can Netflix Strange Days and check it out, which I did just recently. And found it really, really cool. And in addition to never having heard of it, I didn't really look up much about it before I watched it. I'm like, cool, I'm just going to go in cold and just go for it. And I was kind of like, wow, this is, you know, there's a whole movie here. There's a whole movie, and there's a lot of real interesting, like, you know, choices, you know, from the director. And I'm like, holy crap, look at all the extras in this movie and stuff. I'm like, somebody had some money for this thing. It was a big deal. And then the credits came up, and it's like Kathryn Bigelow. I'm like, oh, and story by James Cameron. Oh.
Written by James Cameron.
Co-written
by James Cameron.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm like, interesting. All right, then. That kind of comes into focus.
Suddenly
a little bit,
it made some sense.
On the whole, I enjoyed it. I would like to have seen it a second time before doing this, but I'm along for the ride, and it's a fun one.
The movie will be playing for this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it'll be good.
You will be seeing it a second
time. How are you on Strange Days?
This is another one I believe I saw in the theater when it came out. I liked it then. I have to admit, it's been maybe a year or two since I've seen it last. It's kind of a product of when it was, I think, written and made. There are things about, like, all the stuff with L.A. and the subplot with the kind of the racial tension and all that kind of stuff. I would be interested to hear.
A lot of Rodney King in there.
Exactly. And I would be interested, like, you know, if you were here during that time, like, to talk about some of that stuff. But just, like, the sci-fi elements, like, the character stuff. Like, I think it's really solid. And I think it's... it almost makes me wish maybe James Cameron wrote more stuff.
He writes a lot of stuff, but he always directs it.
Very rarely
does he write something that someone else
directs. It was cool to see what that looked like, basically. I mean, it's like Tarantino with, like, True Romance. Like, it didn't happen very often that he wrote scripts
or Natural Born Killers.
Or Natural Born Killers, yeah. So it's always interesting to see someone that's known for writing and directing their own material, handing it off to someone else, and to see what happens.
Was he married to Kathryn Bigelow at this time?
I think, but I'm around this time, certainly. Mm-hmm. As I understand from memory, you know, Kathryn was after Galen Hurd and before Linda Hamilton. So
we were talking about it earlier. It's like a Trivia Pursuit question. Name three actresses that Jim Cameron was not married to.
It takes a while.
So definitely I like the film. I have recollections that I'm not maybe a fan of all the casting choices in the movie, but
interesting.
We can get it, but that's going to be one of those things where it's like, I think I want to see it again to before I weigh in for certain on that. I remember some of the performances rubbing me a little bit the wrong way. I'm not a big Juliette Lewis fan.
Oh, no kidding.
So, but that might just be a.
I think this is one of my favorite of her performances.
My argument is I don't think I've ever liked her in anything but this.
Really?
Although other than the Rodriguez movie, she's kind of fun in that one.
It very well could be that this is the best thing she's done. She's a very likable actress.
I will say that, you know, it is one of the phrase that comes to mind is fearless. It is one of the most fearless performances I've ever seen an actress give. And, you know, if nothing else, I have tremendous respect for that.
Trey?
Yeah. Well, I guess I was the one who was always advocating the movie.
Constantine, man.
Constantine. I keep trying to make you watch that Unforgiven DVD. But the...
I'm going to eventually watch it and like it and ask you why you didn't make me watch it.
Yeah, let's hope so.
I have my alibi planned.
Yeah. So, I was sick that week. So I saw this movie when it came out. Of course, I'd already worked with Mr. Cameron by then. I'd done The Abyss. So I was, always interested to see what he was going to do next. And Catherine Bigelow was already on the radar because Catherine Bigelow had made a movie called Near Dark, which had gotten a lot of attention because it was kind of like, oh, it's kind of a schlocky B vampire movie and yet interesting. It was one of those movies that was nothing more than what it was and yet got attention because it transcended its genre and was like, wait, this filmmaker's got more going on than the average this kind of movie. So the movie came out and I was actually somewhat aware of the movie before it came out because at the time I happened to happened to meet just socially as a brief acquaintance someone who worked in the Foley department at Skywalker Ranch and still may to this day. I think she might still be working there. And so just, oh, Skywalker Ranch, Foley department. That's awesome. What are you working on right now? Well, we're doing a movie called Strange Days. Really? What's that? Well, it's directed by Kathryn Bigelow. It's got Ralph Fiennes. I'm like, oh, how is it? And she got this really like cloudy look on her face and she goes, I don't know.
Yeah. And that's the answer I would have too.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all, and that, I think Strange Days, your opinion about Strange Days is all going to come down to how you feel about one particular scene, and we all know what scene I'm talking about. Because there's one scene that either you go, okay, you lost me, movie.
You walk out,
that was too much for me. I can't deal with it. Mm-hmm. Or you can get past it, and you can ride through the rest of the movie. And it's an amazingly, if you've seen the movie, I bet you know what scene I'm talking about. It's a scene that's so shockingly brutal and awful. That they're either just going to take you out of the movie forever or you're going to be able to deal with it. And so I'm careful who I recommend this movie to. I would not recommend this movie to everyone I know because I know there's some people who would hate me forever if I said, hey, you should watch Strange Days. It's awesome.
They would get some popcorn and bring a date.
They would get halfway through and then they would say, you monster. Why did you tell me to watch that? So it's not a movie for everybody, but I question the need for that scene being the way it is myself, and God knows we'll get to it. But it's an amazingly brilliant, brilliantly made, dense, crazily detailed script that does all kinds of wonderful things that I don't recall anyone ever else doing in a script before or since. And
Surrogates.
I think it's a fascinating movie. It's one of those movies if it's on cable and I'm flipping channels like Strange Days, I'm in. I'm in front of the couch.
Clear your schedule.
Yeah, I'm in front of the couch, and I'm in until end credits. I just can't not watch it.
Cool. And that being said, you got your mouse or remote at the ready. You're at the point where the 20th Century Fox logo faded to black, although apparently there are versions of this with a Universal logo on it. So right before the Lightstorm logo starts, if you have a different logo. But here we go. 3, 2, 1, unpause.
And we're in. Great Lightstorm logo. And the Lightstorm logo. With the CG the Photoshop lens flares 1.0.
It's kind of Avatar jokes.
Now, I could be wrong. Is this, I'm someone already in the chat room, while I probably would have screamed already. Is this before or after T2?
T2?
After. This was after. 95.
This is after T2. Okay. Yeah. So Linda Hamilton, was Linda Hamilton after, before Catherine Bigelow? I'm confused.
So
who keeps track of Jim's girlfriends? For heaven's sake.
One of the things I was going to open with here is just to say to people listening, because we know there's a lot of people who listen to it without watching the movie, and we know there's a lot of people who watch it without having, listen to this without having
seen it. Please watch the movie first. This one you must watch the movie first, please.
Yes.
I beg you.
Yes.
I concur.
But then the other thing is, by telling people not to not listen to this and just watch it, are we going to catch people when they're halfway through who are just like, what?
Yeah. What the hell just happened?
Okay, holy shit, camera work.
Yeah, now
Jesus Christ.
If you get the DVD, yeah, there's an extensive, it's a weird thing they do on the DVD. It's the only DVD version I think exists, is it's not a commentary by the director, but they basically play the movie with a talk that Kathryn Bigelow gave, but she's talking only about this opening sequence. And by inference, you know, how they did all these POV shots, but mm-hmm, it's extremely complicated, as you can tell if you know anything about filmmaking just looking at it. But they had designed a special camera, a 35mm special camera that weighed 8 pounds, and
awesome.
And Bill, because Cameron can't make a movie without designing a camera to shoot it. You know, Titanic, we need to design a camera. Avatar, we have to design a camera. So
I didn't know this. This is a true fact. Jim Cameron actually invented submarines to shoot Titanic.
He did. Otherwise, we wouldn't have had them.
How would we have had that shot?
Yeah, it's crazy. So they have this special handheld camera, and there's just every kind of rig and trick and imaginable. And just when you see hands, you know, coming and going,
that's the part I was really
massively choreographed
about, because,
you know,
like
phenomenally hard.
Because even getting a camera over someone's shoulder, close enough to their torso, yeah, to get that kind of perspective.
There's a shot later when we finally see Iris's playback where she looks down,
yeah,
at herself, mm-hmm, and it's like you swear the camera is in her head. I mean, it's like an amazing trick. So
there's got to be a few hidden cuts in this.
There are a few.
Yeah.
I think
there already were.
There was one. There's one getting out of the car, because mm-hmm, the car was one thing. And then there's one in the stairwell, I believe, is one that I've noticed before.
But Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just unreal. Now, the thing about this movie is it doesn't slap you over the head with its budget until it does.
Yeah.
There are moments in this movie where you're just like, that is the most expensive thing ever committed to film. I don't understand. I don't know. I can't imagine how they filmed any of the New Year's shit at the end of the movie.
Part of it was this very early thing that, digital crowds? What's mm-hmm that?
Good.
Good. For the really, really big scenes. But
that's a very expensive looking scene.
Yeah. But as we're saying, it's digital domain was a new thing around this time. And it was one of the first sort of like, this is what digital domain does. And digital crowds. Really? Who knew that there was such a thing as possible? But actually, I was reading, it's in the notes. It's in the notes of the DVD. Just to answer that question, they had a big party. Basically, they had a big party and they actually had live bands. So most of those extras were just there to see the show. And then like you do when you have a
perfect
big group, you have raffles and things to, you know, give people an incentive to stick around. And apparently, again, from the description of the thing, this guy does it. This stuntman, makes the jump.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, there was a cut. He was either going to commit or not. And he could cut the shot. But if he was going to make the jump, he would just make the jump. And they would keep rolling after that.
This is the one that kills me right here.
Yeah.
Whoever's operating the camera is about to jump over that.
But not
make
over
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Watch. Yeah. Really happens.
Annoying.
Really happens.
Yeah.
What the hell? It's got to be on an arm.
Yeah, some kind of wire rig, I would imagine. But
it must be. Yeah.
And some tricks and stuff. And then, oh!
That's amazing.
There we go.
She even goes into extreme detail about how they did that video glitching,
mm-hmm,
because that's a whole thing that they agonized over about what the shredding it's called. They called it.
The mm-hmm. It took me a while to realize where I know this guy from. He's the creepy guy that parks the Ferrari in Ferris Bueller.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey! What country do you think this is?
Yeah, and talk about a character who's over the top. This guy's practically cartoonish, but mm-hmm, it does kind of work. You know, he does have that kind of like, you know,
well,
street
kind
junkie
of a,
kind of vibe.
Exactly. There's a desperation, but then again, God, this film is just brimming full of
desperate, damaged,
screwed
people,
up people. I mean, I was thinking about this earlier, just trying to recall, like, okay, who is the one character in this film that has their shit together that
it's
isn't
Mace.
Pathetic? And it's Mace. Yeah,
she's not perfect either. But,
no, but she insists on
she's fighting back.
Exactly,
you know, she's resisting it,
living her life in spite of her circumstances.
Yeah.
The chat room reminds me that this actor's name is Richard Edson, and I'm almost positive it's Brian. But someone we know went to Craigslist to get a bike, and the guy he bought the bike from was this guy.
Oh, nice.
He showed up at this guy's apartment in, you know, Valley Village, like, hey, you are the guy from Strange Days. Okay, where's your bike?
Yeah, I can't wait to see this bike.
Checked watch.
Now, Rafe, Mr. Fiennes here, had already done The English Patient, I think, and had done whatever the other one that made him. Schindler's List. So we didn't really have a handle yet on who this Rafe guy was as an actor. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed seeing him in this character. This is like, oh, wow, you know, that he could be this guy. This mm-hmm. guy is so flawed and so, you know, so messed up.
Sort of hard to pin him down, though. It took me a little while to figure out who his character was. I mean, he's clearly shifty, but he's also there's a good streak, and sometimes the balance is very obvious. Sometimes you get a Malcolm Reynolds where it's like, I can understand both sides of this at once immediately. And I wasn't immediate with him for me watching it. Eventually, I liked him as a character. But it took me a while because I couldn't exactly figure out if I was supposed to like him or not. The movie doesn't really tell you.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, well, the movie's not easy. And, you know, who are you supposed to like in this movie? Angela Bassett is about all that's left.
I liked him pretty early on, and I think part of it was the fact that he wouldn't, like, he had that whole thing about no blackjack, you know, no dicks and things. So
he's got
his
little code. He's got his little code that, you know, for what it's worth, you know, he does have his one code.
He's an ex-cop, is that right? Yeah, that's what I thought.
Used
to be a cop, and now he deals in this stuff. And seeing him work the deals on the phone and just the whole drug dealer angle is interesting.
Yeah. He's dealing the drug of the future, as they say. this sort of nihilistic, like, two chicks beating up Santa Claus. Welcome to Los Angeles at the turn of the century.
The chat room corrects us. An English patient came out after this.
Oh, pardon me. Okay, thank you. So Schindler's List and maybe not much else. So, you know. Yeah.
So this was made in 1995, and this isn't set too far. This is 5 years into the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
now 15 years in the past, looking 5 years in the future, which is odd.
Yeah. And
but it's funny how much of this has panned out and how much of it hasn't yet.
Yeah. Well, it's as Eric was asking before, it's like, you know, this very much plays off the whole Rodney King vibe, which you know, was and I was here for the Rodney King riots, and that was literally like, wow, this could be the apocalypse. I might actually be in the apocalypse.
This city might actually tear itself
apart. It might
apart.
All burn to the ground. You know, I wonder how far out of town I need to get before, you know, I'll be okay. Mm-hmm. It was a weird 3 days. So it definitely, you know, plays off of that idea, and then plays off of this whole idea of the millennium and you know, 2K, which is 2K here. You know, Y2K. I don't think they refer to it as that. That became the real world phrase, but they call it 2K.
But they would have loved it because it was about impending apocalypse.
Yeah, exactly. It's this whole idea of, you know, that the apocalypse is, you know, hey, if it's not 2000, then when? So there's the nipples.
This movie, it also reminds me, and this I think this came before, the music video for the Prodigy song Smack My Bitch Up, which was the same sort of a gimmick where you're watching it from the first person perspective the entire time, and it appears to be a oneer. It's not. And you're going on this like coke binge, and then you end up with a stripper, and then at the end of the video, spoiler, she looks in the mirror and it's actually a girl that you've been in the entire time, even though this character has been breaking into cars and doing lines of coke off of strippers and shit. It's a girl. Oh my god. And I saw it then, I see it now, I still love it. I just love the idea of being in someone's head on film. It's just a cool thing to try to pull off, and some people don't do it as well as others. And I immediately start hating it as soon as a gun enters the frame, because then it becomes a video game. And my brain goes, oh, fuck.
Oh, Doom. Great.
Yeah, Doom.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not just drugs. I mean, it's also part porn, too. I mean, he's peddling so many different things wrapped up into one and doing his best to sell it elegantly, both sides of it, both the...
Yeah, and justify it, you know, like, ah, what's the harm, you know? It's like, who gets hurt, really? It's like, well, there are robberies happening and people are getting beaten up, but the... what's interesting about him, what's, you know... that guy probably still could get laid even with that hair going, but that's all right. But one of the things that's interesting about the character is, of course, you know, his whole pitch is... This will allow you to have new experiences. This is how you have new experiences. Yeah. And so that's his whole sales pitch. But he uses it to have old experiences.
Right.
And that's his, you know, his trauma is that, you know, that he can't let go of these old memories that he has. And he keeps playing them back. And therefore they, you know, it's later Angela Bassett sums up the whole sort of thematic idea of the movie, where she goes, memories are supposed to fade. They're designed like that.
For a reason.
Yeah.
That's a great line.
And, it's brilliant.
You know, it really got me to thinking, we talk about, here's the surrogates connection, is we spent the whole surrogates thing talking about how here's the premise and here's all the things the movie didn't even begin to deal with about this premise. Whereas I think this movie takes the premise and deals really, really kind of gives you a, well, if that existed, that probably is what would happen. There would be the people who would use it for
exploring.
But then there would be people who would be stuck in reliving that wonderful thing.
But that's, I mean, for people that I think get lost in, you know, drugs and alcohol. I mean, it's just a metaphor for, I think, the kind of addiction that happens anyway. People that lose themselves in the past, people that lose themselves in fantasy, people that, you know.
Some people never get over Nam or the night their band opened for Nirvana.
That's right. Yeah. It's but what's fascinating to me about it is that if you literally could really re-experience a memory of, you know, in this case, an ex-girlfriend, I can see how you could go a decade and never get over it, because you don't get to have the memory fade away. You can literally remember exactly what it was like to be with
her. It is fucked up beyond all belief. Yeah. And to think that, like, the person has moved on, but yet you're still having sex with them. Yeah.
You still remember her from the...
Like, that's like, fucking... Yeah. That's so wrong on so many levels.
So this first of all, this actress here who plays Iris... This is the character who has the most thankless part in this movie.
Yeah, she has a hard job to do.
She does nothing but just get, you know, progressively more victimized, and it's a tough part to play. And she certainly gives it her all. And then of course we've got our two cops who are Vincent D'Onofrio and William Fichtner. You know, who are like, you know.
By
like,
the way, I recognize Fichtner the whole time. You know, I never ever recognized D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
I still don't know what that guy fucking looks like.
Yeah.
I know what Orson Welles looks like. I know what Edgar the Bug looks like. Yeah. I just don't know what Vincent D'Onofrio looks like.
Hey, Joker. Full Metal Jacket.
And
William Fichtner, who has like all of two lines.
Private pile, you know.
Yeah, Fichtner has like two, three lines in this whole movie. Mostly he just reacts.
He does Fichtner very severely.
He Fichtners the hell out of it.
Go Fichtner yourself. I love William Fichtner.
Apparently, as I recall, in 99, most of L.A. was on fire all the time. That was kind of just a given, that there was fires burning.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's almost set up like how the 80s always portrayed the future, which is the cheap way. It's all just bombed out, like car shells and oil drums with fires.
It's like the bad 85.
Yeah, but it's interesting, and I like it more here because it's like it's not – this isn't so far off in the future that there's all kinds of other stuff going on. It's the near future with a magic bean. That's really all it is.
Yeah, one magic bean.
And
otherwise the technology is, you know, it's like, okay, he's got a text-to-speech voicemail thing. But that's about as high-tech as the movie goes.
Yeah, right. And we have that now, so no longer a magic bean.
Yeah, exactly.
I find it interesting that it has a water cooler in his apartment.
Well, that's what you
could
would
be
do.
That the tap water's not good to drink.
That's it wasn't. I had one of those in my dorm room. I paid the money for the Sparklets guy to come. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that he's got that kind of drug dealer, drug addict vibe because he's got aluminum foil in his windows. But that's because he sleeps during the day and he works at night.
Ah, mini disc.
Yeah.
Everyone remember mini disc?
Very high tech.
Mm-hmm. I do, 90s. And that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
If I'd forgotten about this, I would be able to watch this happily. But I'm just like, that's a Sony mini disc player.
Well, it's a tricked out one that I believe Stan Winston's company made the squids, the squids receptors and so on. Mm-hmm. And they kind of tricked it out with, made a player that looked kind of futuristic.
Oh, nice. Yay. While we were recording here at Ryan's apartment, because we don't have a TV at my apartment, the TV that I bought yesterday was delivered, and I just got a picture of it.
So get the fuck out.
And it is big. I have a big old Christmas present.
So here we are living in the actual future, because that's what's actually happening. While we're talking about watching this movie that was about the faux future that no one really knew what it was going to be like.
Yeah. What a fun concept. By now, I was like really... I was first time watching this
you
movie.
Super
I'm like, I'm
it.
In. Like, what? This is a brilliant idea. Yeah. Just this whole playback thing.
I'm totally surprised at just how fast this is moving.
Yeah.
I like the pace is. I mean, it's not breakneck, but like, we're maybe what 15, 20 minutes in, and a lot of shit has gone down. Yeah.
And it's a 2 hour and 20 minute movie.
A lot of stuff is being set up really fast.
Yeah.
And the way they quickly immerse you in the world and with this technology and its consequences. It's well done.
And I, you know, I've always been ambivalent about Juliette Lewis, but she's cute.
She pulls off that thong.
She's awfully cute in this.
And that was
scene.
I've always kind of not liked her. I've had the opposite of a crush on Juliette Lewis. Not as bad as Kirsten Dunst, but she's always just been a little too flower child for me.
Your problem with Kirsten Dunst is well documented.
Yes,
it's inexplicable.
Yep. But she's always been a little flower childy for me. But I remember when I was watching this movie, I was working on my computer and I just kind of kept looking over to Netflix to see what was going on. And I was like, holy shit. Has she been hot this whole time?
Yeah.
Wait a second. And now I like her. So, oops.
Yeah, yeah, see, too late. Well, now it's too late to like her.
This is a good
She's gone now. She doesn't do much acting anymore. So now one of the things that it's I don't think it says explicitly at any point, but you're going to see the quick glimpse of him in the mirror, which, first of all, again, is an amazing bit of trickery.
Mm-hmm.
But she seems so much younger here than she does later when we meet her again, and it's part of its attitude. But he also seems much younger. Mm-hmm. So it always brings up the question, like, I wonder how long when was this? I mean, how long ago literally were they together? I mean, because
it's
the only thing that kind of limits it is, well, the technology had to be available, so it can't be like this is 1985.
Right, true.
But but the idea, I kind of like the idea that literally if it's 10 years later and he's still stuck because, you know, he's got these memories that are just as fresh as the day they happened.
So around the room,
I was watching the shoulder.
Yeah, look at
how are they doing
the turn, really the turning away is all really in sync. Like, there she goes turning.
It's really the reflection.
Yeah.
Did they just paint out the camera?
They painted out the camera guy. Yeah,
well fucking done, guys.
Not because I read that, but because I went that way. Wait a minute, because the mirror being tilted is the part that really makes it cool. It's not just a mirror room and then doubles. It's actually it's tilted. You're looking up at them. But yeah. if you check out her elbow in that first little bit, it's got a little dark edge where you can
a little splotchiness.
The camera was wearing something dark, and then they couldn't quite get that.
Nice. There's a shot later in the hotel room where you can actually see the feet of the cameraman reflected in one of the mirrors coming in behind. It's barely there, and only douchebags who I normally hate, you know, spot that stuff. But they again painting something out. Oh, we don't have the other $10,000 to paint out the 10 frames of those guys' feet, you know, in 95.
This scene here, and then later in the middle of the rape scene.
Yeah,
I was expecting there to be the camera going in and out and in and out, and like you know, just head mounted POV, just yeah. Like
thank God not
shitty internet YouTube, well, yeah. Not YouTube, what XTube, you know, rape cam. And I'm glad they didn't. It really
that would have cheapened it.
Yeah, it would have been really
not that it wasn't a little exploitive to begin with.
No, but that would have been the like really just. What are we watching?
This is not the kind of movie you want your mom to walk in on, though.
No. Literally, what are you watching? It's not porn. No, it's thoughtful
art.
Science fiction.
It's art.
Movie.
It's contemplative.
Yeah. It's directed by a woman.
Well, and that's nice, too. It's nice to see the sexuality on the surface and the fact that it's directed by a woman. So.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, and
Catherine Bigelow is all about, forget that I'm a woman, I'm a director.
Well, yeah, because she makes movies about boys. I mean, it's like, you know.
And Cameron makes movies about girls.
Yeah, it's weird, but.
It just occurred to me that it was actually just that having that part where they have sex in the playback was very important for priming you for that happening later. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine what it would have been like if it's like, oh, we just had this fun outing. Okay, that was it. Mm-hmm. So you're totally not ready for that at all. You know?
Yeah. The irony later on is, of course, when he's watching that last playback, it's like, well, he is getting to have sex with her again. You know, he's getting to do it one more time. I guess that's good, right? Anyway, but yeah, it is Catherine Bigelow. You know, she made Point Break, which is one of the great crazy testosterone movies of all time. I don't care what anyone else thinks. I think so. Fascinating, fun movie. Another movie that I'll kind of go, okay, crap, it's on. I have to watch it now. She made this. She made Near Dark.
Ah, Morning Popsicle.
Yeah, she made the Widowmaker, K-19. I never saw that one, so I don't know anything about that one. And, of course, Hurt Locker is you know, a pretty testosterone-y movie, too. So it's just, you know, she just has that sensibility. And she, you know, I believe she caught some flack for, like, how can you as a woman filmmaker do
a scene that is
so degrading and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, she's like, well, bite me.
And that scene a minute ago on the TV, and again later, I think they come back to it when they're in the club or something. The Jericho one, his rapping, you know, rapping was a little different in 1995,
exactly.
I guess, but it's really
it's pretty
funny.
Threatening. I was pretty scared.
Like, it's really like Beat Poet in a coffee shop, kind of just like the man.
Yeah,
I was going to actually ask you guys. I was wondering how you felt about the Jericho one character and that whole kind of just that kind of. Side story, not about the story itself, but just as a character and being like, because he's like, he's what, an entertainer, but he's also like a rabble rouser and politically active and
well, it's again, that was sort of starting to happen. I mean, it still sort of happens, although they kind of, the whole rap culture, from what I'm, you know, kind of swung off into, no, it's all about bling and, you know,
it got really materialistic.
Yeah,
it's not about like fight the power and, you know,
but there, you know, there was that, you know, there was NWA and fuck the police and, you know, and a lot of that, you know, sort of stuff going on of you know, that there was activism involved in rap, because, you know, it's funny how everything starts out revolutionary and becomes mainstream. So, you know, rap is now about, yeah, look at my house, you know. It's like a, you know, an original rapper would be like, I'm burning your house to the ground, motherfucker. It's not about material possessions. It's about, you know, anarchy and whatever else. So this is, again, you know, you try and project the future, and the future doesn't turn out the way you thought it was headed. And so rapping didn't really become synonymous with social activism. It became synonymous with conspicuous consumption instead.
Which is unfortunate.
Just like rock and roll did. And rock and roll was going to change the world and then just bought a bunch of houses and jets in the end. So it's, you know, it's a repeating cycle. So,
but I can buy it as a character and sort of the the character's understanding of the ramifications of his death, if the true nature of it got out, like, I was totally like, oh, yeah, sure. You put that up on the big screens in Times Square, and it'll be all over. It'll be a huge war. Yeah. So it worked for me in terms of that. That was, I think, all the whole point of it was, is for it to be this potential bomb that could go off.
Yeah, I mean, if you sort of, even if it's, I mean, try and think of a modern day equivalent. I mean, okay, Snoop Dogg, maybe not, but I mean, you know, it's Kanye West. If the police,
if Tupac had been shot execution style by cops,
if Kanye West was gunned down in public and there was videotape of it. You know, I mean, look what happened to Rodney King. Was nobody and the world went mad. You know, so it's like if it was a celebrity, you know, it's the nature of the killing that is what was so offensive that set people off.
I like that we've had the scenes so using.
Go ahead.
We've had the scenes with the, you know, he's doing some playback. So we kind of get how it works. Then we have this scene which really kind of spells it out a little bit more to someone who's never done it. So it's not really an as you know. And I kind of think that worked pretty well for, you know, because I was curious too. I was like, at about this point, it came at the right time.
Like, how does this work?
I want to know the particulars now.
Yeah. It expands upon what we've already seen and what we think we understand, and it also, like, he, you know, I love the gentle way, like, he's nudging this guy in and encouraging him to think outside the box about the different kinds of experiences he can have, and you know.
Now the thing is, though, this doesn't synthesize events. You have to have them recorded.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
So it is a little. I don't know if it's necessarily true. And he's like, "You can do anything."
Well, I think he's just saying that. Listen, I've got a back room full of recordings of anything you want.
There's also an implication that if you want something custom, if the money's good, he'll make it happen for you.
That was the other thing at the bar when he was like, "Okay, that was good. You got to not move. You got to not look around so much. It's very disorienting."
Yeah, he actually does. He
make the video.
Yeah, he's like part porn director on top of everything else.
He will create custom product, as he will later for Todd Graff's character. He goes, "Hey, I got a little something I made for you." You know, he actually does commission works.
Think about how interesting that would be as like an industry of like a movie set, you build this whole
stage, the whole scenario,
to walk through, and then you get to relive it. You know,
absolutely.
They don't get into that, but because it's all black market, obviously. But.
So then, you know, if it became that mainstream, then it would turn into the equivalent of YouTube. We're gonna look at this. Check out this awesome video of a guy like getting punched in the nuts. That's fake. That's totally fake.
Now, here's the thing, though. I thought I knew, and then I was unclear by the end of the movie. This also induces the feelings of what's going on too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think at first I didn't think it would because it doesn't seem intuitive to this idea. But then the more it is, and
it's directly into your brain. So
exactly.
And well, then, he said things like smell and touch.
Yeah, you get the full sensory experience of it.
Yeah,
exactly. And that's why I think it's especially sort of haunting during the rape scenes where he has to have an orgasm while he's watching this.
Yeah,
it's very you can see it on his face.
You are having sex while you're watching this horrifying thing. You know,
and you can't not. Haunting. Yeah, there's that he's trying to resist and not. He just has to endure it, like it's terrible.
Yeah, and the concept of this movie does owe a little bit to a movie called Brainstorm, which is the same idea.
I heard about that.
Which is Doug Trumbull, you know, one of Doug Trumbull's few movie directing gigs, Silent Running. I think Brainstorm might have been his second movie he ever directed, and maybe the only two he's ever directed. I'm not sure how many other ones he's done. But Brainstorm is the same idea, the idea of being able to completely record the whatever a person is sensing, whatever their experience is. And so one of the big plot points of that one is a woman, a character dies while wearing the machine, and so everyone wants to, like, know, well, what was recorded? You know, it's like so that's one of the things that you know that the movie deals with. But it's a much bigger, you know, 10-15 years older in technology machine. So it's much larger and more cumbersome. But there is a guy. There's a character, not to give too much away, but there's a character who first thing they do is record sex with it, and then there's a guy who literally plays a tape, a big fancy tape. A guy literally makes an orgasm loop and just plays it and blows his brains out.
Sure,
he fries his brain.
Oh, wow,
because he has like a 48-hour orgasm, and they just come and they find him still just in the loop. Gang.
This is one actually the few things that I was really just kind of like, really, in the movie is. How little he cares as soon as he just scared away this client that he spent 45 minutes with and gave a sample to him.
Apparently,
it's you.
Well, one of the things about...
Well, that does imply that he gets a lot of business.
Yeah, one of the things about Fine's character is he's completely confident that he can talk anyone into anything. Yeah. Whether or not he can, because obviously you see him fail as often, but he thinks that he thinks that he can always get another fish on the line. Now, here's you were mentioning earlier, someone was talking earlier about, you know, Tom Sizemore. It's like you immediately kind of go, oh, it's Tom Sizemore, something's up. But again, in 95, you didn't have that reaction to Tom Sizemore. Yeah. It was more like, who's that guy? Who yeah, actually was, exactly. He was a Bigelow regular. He's in, he's almost, you won't even recognize him, but he is in Point Break. He was much thinner. And you kind of go, wow, that looks like Tom Sizemore, except really, really thin.
So it's size less.
Yeah. He was now he's one or two sizes more.
I got jokes.
Yeah.
I got jokes all day long.
Oh, yeah.
I got zingers on a card.
He's got them all written down in advance.
Flashcards. You're like Sizemore S. Yeah.
It's a shame about, you know, Sizemore can't seem to get his personal life together because I really do like him and on screen.
He is an intense motherfucker.
He is. And you think about how many movies he's been in. He's been in all of them, I think.
Size many of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a stretch, I know.
Yeah. Now, of course, okay, we're going to – do we draw the line here and go, okay – if you haven't watched Strange Days yet, this is your final warning.
Yeah, you're about to.
If you haven't watched this movie yet, we're going to start getting all spoilery on you. So,
yeah. Bail now.
It's all on your head from here on
out. Hasn't this all sounded very interesting?
Yeah.
Good. Stop this.
Yes.
Watch the movie.
You should go watch it then if you haven't watched this movie yet.
It's Voldemort with a nose. Yeah. He's got high tech things.
Because if you start watching. So it's.
Yeah, spoilers now.
As Ryan was saying, it's like he wanted to. Ryan, you said you wanted to watch it again. Because sure, you really do, once you know the twist at the end, you want to watch it again because you really do see, you know, it all makes sense. It's it's brilliantly put together that, you know, that Sizemore is really. You see him doing everything that you realize later he was doing. There's your spoiler, ladies and gentlemen.
For a moment when this first happened, I wasn't sure if this guy was actually a tow guy or if this is what he does. He just goes around.
Yeah, he goes around with a tow truck.
It's the future. There's smoke plumes coming out of places.
There are some cities where it's apparently not much different than that, where they literally will they barely.
Detroit. If we can't have cars, nobody can.
Chicago supposedly was notorious for that.
They would just
Steve Goodman wrote a song called The Linkin Park Pirates, which is all about, yo, ho, we tow you away. And it was all about the tow truck operators in Chicago.
I like his whole fake Rolex thing he's doing all the time.
He's got a whole bucket full of them. And look at that high-tech cell phone he's got.
Sweet.
2,000-year-old. Now, here she comes, ladies and gentlemen.
What else has she been in?
What's Love Got to Do with It? Stella Got Her Groove Back.
What's her birthday?
I have no idea.
I don't know. You had the answer for the last one.
I have no idea. I have the same birthday as Sigourney Weaver.
I love her in
this. Angela Bassett's been in plenty of things. This is my favorite of what I've seen. Far and away, Angela Bassett role. And we were mentioning earlier Jim Cameron. This is what tells you it's a Jim Cameron film, this character. Mm-hmm. Because, by golly, if he hasn't come up with yet another kick-ass female who's still a woman and not an automaton and not just a guy with a, you know, they turn into a woman. You know, she's a woman, absolutely, and she has feelings and she gets upset and she'll still kick your ass.
Yeah.
She's the quintessential Cameron character.
I really like that about her, especially in the scene where they just get out of the car and she just fucking yells at him.
Yeah, just lays into him.
Wow, this is awesome. And then later when she was like, you know, you can see those guns this chick has,
yeah,
man.
I know.
Jeez.
I would totally could they have dressed her any better? They could not.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, she's a fantastic character, and she plays the hell out of it.
Indeed.
Although I didn't get the first time around her feelings for him until, later into the movie, and then I'm kind of like, oh, okay, I guess that makes sense. Like, that kind of, that explains some of the early scenes. I'm like, why is she putting up with this douchebag?
Yeah.
Like, really?
It really is.
Because so much of the movie is unrequited love. I mean, her for him and him for his ex. And
this part is interesting. It kind of has, the reverses of them. They all have this sort of, off and on lens flare from the background thing. Mm-hmm. And, this was even shot with the same type of lens to get that weird chromatic thing. I don't know if that was, a whole intentional, mirrored in the reverses thing, but it's kind of interesting.
Good catch.
Yeah.
Drink up.
Yeah, I liked this film a lot when I first saw it, and when I found out that they, and this is a total nerd comment, but when I found out that they were going
to
make an X-Men film, to me, there was no one that could play Storm but her, completely based on this movie.
That would have been so great.
And then when I saw X-Men and saw Halle Berry's crap performance, I mean, not that it was the only, there were lots of things wrong with that first film, but that was a huge disappointment because, she's so incredible. She's so powerful. It's like, okay, she's got to be a mutant goddess, too, because she's that awesome.
Yeah. Well, it's a huge departure for her.
She's done a lot of dramas.
She's known for, you know, being, you know, a very serious actress. She's been nominated for Oscars. I mean, how many Oscar nominees are on the screen right now? There's two in a movie like this. You know, Sizemore, I don't think has ever been. No, that's I can't think of that fella's name, but he's an Alien Resurrection. He's the he's the captain of the Betty.
And, the Crow. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah,
there it is.
He's also the captain of the Betty in Alien Resurrection. Can't think of his name off the top of my head right now, but yeah, I always liked that guy.
He's like the taller British dude. Heath Ledger.
Wasn't he in Last of the Mohicans?
No, he wasn't in Last of the Mohicans.
Shots on that guy. Yeah, he's an amazing guy. He really should. I mean, if someone. They really should do the Keith Richards story, and he's really the only guy to play it. Unless Keith Richards will do it, but otherwise he really should be
Michael
the one.
Michael Wincott.
That's
Thank you, Pavlich.
Right. Yeah. Now, again, what started to tell me, like, wow, what was the budget on this movie? And chat room, look it up for me, because in 95.
Yeah,
what was the budget?
The budget on this was $42 million.
And 95, that ain't peanuts.
Unfortunately, the gross sort of $8
million. Yeah, no, not a popular movie.
Very, very
unpopular.
Wow. They didn't put money behind the ads or what? Where did the money – how do you only get $8 million into this movie?
Yeah.
It's a good question.
It's a fascinating question. But the fact that – what tells me it was a big-budget movie, regardless, you know, then you get to the end, you go, oh, my God.
Is the fact that they've
got Hollywood Boulevard blocked off for these extensive scenes with burning cars and tanks going up and down. You know, it's like that's not cheap.
It's always funny going back, for me, watching old movies like this, because I'm like, hey, they're actually in a car driving around.
Yeah.
It's not like a freaking green screen everywhere.
Yeah, it's refreshing.
You sound bitter.
Yeah.
Have you had to do a bunch of those comps?
Sure. It's just the approach and the way that people make movies and TV these days. I mean, so much stuff at the end of this movie would never be real. So much of this junk would be CG, and it's like, you know, well,
I hate,
visual
effects.
But, yeah. That just makes people lazy.
You know, I just watched, this is a weird switch, but I just watched the call it the original Gunga Din, but I don't think Gunga Din's ever been remade, 1939. And it's a weird kind of clunky movie. You know, it has that kind of – doesn't hold up as well as other 1939 movies. I mean, it's not nearly as slick as Wizard of Oz. It's not nearly as slick as Gone with the Wind or any of those other 39 classics. But one of the things is, like, when they go, look, there's the cavalry and there's 500 guys on horses. There's 500 guys on horses. I mean, that was – right there was, like, shocking to me. Like, my God, they actually – you know, there was a time when you would just get 500 guys on 500 horses and line them up, and that's how you had to make a movie.
In the chat room, Frank says that Goldman loves Gunga Din.
I know, and I saw it because I've read, and shockingly, he's in the special features of the Gunga Din DVD talking about Gunga Din. So I finally had to watch Gunga Din because of freaking Goldman.
I love this guy. Well, not that guy, but the guy inside who's going to be his client in the car because he's so cool with everything.
Yeah.
He's like, okay. And he's like, excuse me. While they have this giant spat outside the car, and he's like, all right, good times. Yeah.
Plus, of course, he's being Japanese. He's got even better gear than Rafe does. You know, he's got the new Japanese version.
Yeah,
hey, look at mine. Now, this club, too, is like, you know, well, the club is no stretch at all because there are plenty of clubs to this day that are like this club they're going to go to. The retinal fetish.
Right.
That's what you call an Apple fan now.
Yeah, it's only one step away from the club they go to in The Social Network, for Pete's sake. Just a little more fetishy than that one.
Somewhere in that club, Leah Thompson is having sex with a duck.
let's hope. If it's a good club, yeah.
I only go to the best. I don't go to any. I hate clubs, but whatever. So gas prices, huh, Ryan?
I like the way he turned around this whole situation on, as far as the client is concerned, he's like her supervisor or whatever.
Now he's such
a douche.
They pretty much refused to have him save the cat in this. I mean,
that's true.
He's pretty, you know. I
couldn't explain to you why I like this guy.
He's
so
walking
far.
The border of being just, wait, this guy is our hero? Seriously? You know, it's like I think
he succeeds in being charming and seducing even to us.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
he's just that good.
I think he is. Yeah.
And I guess if there's anything that's, you know, his redeeming thing is we've seen that he does have this genuine love for this girl that we don't know anything else about yet,
mm-hmm.
you know, other than that she's gone now. You know,
and some boundaries.
Yeah. We don't know who Faith is or what happened to Faith yet.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe it's a tragic love story.
Which was honestly, all right, this is actually a relevant point, which if there's something else.
Get
out
of here.
Then
fuck.
Let me know, but,
yeah,
right. Just making things up. You know, when he goes to the club and stuff, as soon as this stuff started happening, I'm like, why is he still into this chick? Like, why? No. Like she's
that was one of the questions I would ask too.
As I'm going, I'm like, I personally do not care what happens to this.
I would say though that's the issue of the fact that he doesn't see her as she is. He sees her as the young kid that he rescued from the street and was still kind of innocent.
And that's the thing, and maybe that's part of it too, because I'm like, dude, it's
over.
It is over. But I guess that's the point, is that he just lives in these memories with her.
He really doesn't see that she's not that person at all, even though she tells him that at the top of her lungs. She's like, really? No, I'm not that person. If any scene takes me out of the movie, weirdly enough, it's not the rape scene, it's that freaking glass. Because I think, okay, that had to be a special rig.
Choking him out.
Had to be a special rig, because they wouldn't have just let her, gauge.
No.
When to do it.
It's like it must, stop at pressure, or
it only will go so far, and they very carefully measured it, because... My thing is okay, she could probably hit the mark going up, but what if she throws the switch the wrong way to bring it back down?
Yeah.
I mean, this is the kind of risk you don't have to take in a movie.
But I wonder, this is a fantastic conversation, but I wonder if these cars with the limos with the glass, I wonder if it's like a garage door opener, where if you put your hand in it stops.
You would think,
Because I would imagine that would happen all the time.
But power windows don't work like that anyway.
That's true.
Yes, it's a very unsafe world we live in.
And we don't even have all the freaking riots.
It's one of those many things. If they invented power windows right now, there would be some parents' council go, don't you understand you could chop off your children's head with these? Mm-hmm. Yes, that's the point. That's why we made them. Enjoy them. So she is just badass as all hell. And with the cornrows. Gotta love the cornrows.
I love sci-fi.
Well, this is like.
It's just vaguely.
This
sci-fi.
Is how you do sci-fi, because it's this is.
I don't think it's vaguely sci-fi.
I'll clarify. It's vaguely sci-fi for Hollywood standards, but it's pure sci-fi because with one change, with one we just added this piece of technology, and what would the world be like?
I guess
if we had this piece of technology.
By the correct definition, then yes.
Yeah, it's textbook sci-fi, just not by Hollywood movie standards.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Hollywood movie standards. There should be spinners floating in the background and flying cars and everything else. But
this guy, actually coming up as we enter the club, there's a guy who has total Malcolm Reynolds suspenders.
Oh, no kidding.
Let's check that guy out. he stole those from.
He totally is.
From Mal.
Next stop. By the way, we're in a big winner here. We're coming out of the car, and then whole thing is happening. It's all one shot.
If I recall correctly, this was the scene that they brought the band in for.
Yes, it would make sense.
And one of the bands, I think there was two or three of them, but one of them was Aphex Twin, which is a band that I enjoy very much. That is not Aphex Twin.
No. The party, the Millennium Party, is where they brought bands in and just had people come. And they said, it's for a movie, and it's the year 2000, so if you want to make 2000 songs.
Here's what's weird. There's one with a book burning, and then there's one where there's just a dude ironing. Seriously.
Yeah, there's a fetish for everything.
It's performance art for you, sir.
There's a fetish for everything. It's what is it, rule? I keep getting the number wrong. Rule 4. It's not 42.
I gotta go check
it's not
out
rule
that
42.
34, I think.
Rule 34.
If it exists, someone wants to fuck it.
Well, if it exists, there's porn for it on the internet. It's internet rule 34.
I like to shorten it. Someone wants to fuck it.
Yeah, well.
See that mixture board? Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So I, like I said, I'm not a Juliette Lewis fan except in this movie. Then totally,
explain a...
Totally down with this movie for her.
How did you categorize her performance?
Fearless.
Fearless. Mm-hmm. Explain fearless.
The fact that she's virtually nude the entire movie. I mean, even when she's wearing clothes, she's not really wearing much clothes. Mm-hmm. And the fact that
you can see through it.
Yeah. And the fact that she sings. I mean, she talks about, she wasn't really a singer. She kind of had the rock star fantasy, but she'd never really done it. So she really had to kind of overcome a fear of performing, because, she's really doing it in front of these extras.
Huh.
And she sort of got into that afterwards, and now she has, or at least has been more of a musician, kind of doing that. I was an actor, now I'm doing musician.
Yeah,
stuff.
I was gonna say. I guess I don't know a lot about her. I assumed the scene like that was she had aspirations or was doing that a bit, and they kind of like, we'll have a scene where
where she's like a rock star and stuff, and so it's but the fact that it's not the kind. It's not. I would not go to a club and see that performer do that act. But watching her in the movie, I'm like, my God, look at her just putting that out there.
The
energy that she, the energy that she puts into it. I find her really fascinating in this movie.
In the chat room, Frank is quote fearless : she showed me her boobies and I like them.
That's right, and she didn't care how many times Teague mentioned her nipples.
I mentioned them. I haven't mentioned her nipples.
Yeah, but you will. The blonde girl actually is another one. Apparently,
yeah, that was
apparently,
a catch 22.
Apparently, all the henchmen only have the one outfit because the blonde girl only has the one outfit that she wears for 48 hours. But she's another amazing. Like, wow, what's her deal? You know, I want to know her backstory. Mm-hmm. What is the chick with the dreads and the lingerie who punches you in the head? What was the audition like for her job? Was there like a test? Was it like a quiz?
Wesley Snipes is throwing him out now.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be awesome if that was Wesley Snipes? Can we start a rumor?
That's
Snipes. No, totally it is. It really is. He's uncredited. It's Wesley Snipes.
We should have like a spinoff where he has a sword and fights vampires.
It's absolutely Wesley Snipes. Yeah.
This guy is such a douchebag. Like, and maybe it's just I'm coming into that being able to actually be perceptive as movies are playing, but I'm like, I bet he's the bad guy.
Yeah. Well,
and then, of course, halfway through, I'm like, we're so past that. I'm like, oh.
He's kind of the red herring, though. He's one of the many red herrings absolutely. In the movie. It's like every villain you think is the villain is not really the real villain, which is great about this movie.
He never knows when to take no. Like, he you know, you hit him, you punch him, you throw him out. He just goes, he gets right back up and tries.
He really is. He's Bugs Bunny. He just like keeps on coming back. he keeps bouncing back. And there's Todd Graff, ladies and gentlemen. Todd Graff, a.k.a. Hippie from The Abyss. The rat guy.
Oh, the rat guy.
Rat dude from The Abyss.
Rat
who's now, who's now more of a director. He's been directing some directing now. He's and he does have legs.
I always like movies where, okay, this is his job. He goes around and he switches these TVs and stuff. And it's like, but whenever you see it in the movie, it's like, yeah, he's drinking. He's like, woo, yeah. And I'm like, is he doing that for like 8 hours on end? Just like anytime you go up, I'm like, that guy is on a lot of coke.
He is hardcore.
We just caught him in a groove. Like, there's a low point at some point.
He just loves
like,
showing
up. At some point
that,
he gets tired and he's like, woo.
Now, here's one of the weirdest things. Right? Fan mail from some flounder is like right up there with of all things, reminds me of The Social Network, where all the cultural references are 40 years old. So it's kind of like, here's a movie about, you know, Social Network is like, here's a movie about guys who went to college 10 years ago, and somehow all of their cultural references are from, like, 50-year-old white dudes would have, like, say, an Aaron Sorkin and a David Fincher. The fact, fan mail from some flounders. Fan mail from flounders, throw it out to the room. Mean anything to anyone?
Sorry.
Nope.
That's Rocky and Bullwinkle. That's a Rocky and Bullwinkle quote literally from the 60s. So it's so funny that, you know, fan mail from some flounder is like those characters that age and my age totally get that. But and Cameron gets it, obviously, because he wrote it. But, you know.
I hope he didn't pay much for that clip. He just run by a chick. It's like, geez.
Good point. In the chat room.
It's about the legs.
Strip Innis says, wheelchair guy getting legs. Avatar pre-idea.
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess actually now that I'm
living another
about
experience
it, yeah,
by having legs and not having legs. Yeah.
That would make that better for him.
So, Mr. Stupinis, who says that he spoke about this movie with Mr. Cameron, hey, why aren't you sitting here telling us about it? So, is it really a, you know, that's how it got me thinking about Avatar, or is it just a weird coincidence?
More on that when the chat eventually
catches up to what we're about to say. Yeah. So here comes Juliet Lewis, and like I said, I
was paying attention. She's doing a great job with it.
Yeah,
she can do this.
Yeah, it's funny how is she acting as a singer because as she plays a singer and it works. You know, maybe she's not really a singer. But
well, now she has a band. So
yeah,
there you go,
and a booty.
That's correct.
So you can have the nipples. I'm all about the other thing.
He says yes, but I don't share those stories. JC would kill me.
Yeah, I got some I can't share either.
Why does Jesus care?
Yeah.
He cares about you, Teague.
Yeah. I got some stories I can't tell either. So, yeah.
I got stories about Jesus.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you know, Catherine Bigelow, art school, you think? Yeah, a little bit. Went to art school. So.
In the credits, they had a specific credit about the lighting in this scene as done by whoever, but it sounded like a place that goes around and just does lighting for clubs. So I don't think this is really like movie lighting. This is just you know, wacky club lighting, and then they're like, great, awesome, more strobe lights please.
Yeah, that's right, more strobes.
Yeah,
more strobes. Yeah, it's now movies are always beautiful looking.
I like the fiddle man.
We actually I skipped over one of her more better off forgotten movies, Blue Steel, which is nothing to do with Zoolander at all. But Blue Steel is a beautiful looking, completely ridiculous movie that she did. I think it might have been her first or second after Near Dark. It was certainly before this and before Point Break, I'm pretty sure. But that one is one you watch once and you go, well, that was a good looking movie with a lot of stylish things. And what? Uh-huh. I have no idea what that was all about. Doesn't make a lick of sense, but a good-looking movie.
Watching this, I was kind of wishing I was familiar with her work before this. I don't think I've seen
What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
Yeah.
Never saw that?
Cape Fear. No, Cape Fear, I think, was her first big sort of breakout. She was very young when she did Cape Fear. I mean, she's pretty young doing this movie.
She What's Eating Gilbert Grape is worth watching. You should check it out. Yeah. And Leonardo DiCaprio being a retarded 12-year-old.
Yeah, like you do. The,
at age 26.
And the Robert from Dusk Till Dawn. You know, she's fun in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, well, Natural Born Killers, we're talking about. She's in that.
Yeah. And the thing is, and I guess this is where...
Now, that could be... I can see how that could be a love it or hate it performance in Natural Born Killers.
The thing about her and why I don't really like her, generally speaking, is I think...
Christmas Vacation.
Is it,
yeah, okay, sure.
I feel like she does such a good job of being kind of trashy that I'm just... She just convinces me that she is that. And but for Natural Born Killers, like, it's such an unhinged fucking movie and performance. It, like, it works, you know? And for me, this movie, it's like, you know, yeah, she's like, fuck, this is who he's hung up on? Really? Yeah. Like, this is the girl that he's like, I mean, okay, she's pretty. I'll give you that. But, like, you can't argue that, oh, she's... you know, a woman of intelligence and soul. It's like, that's the woman who was driving the fucking car that he screwed over, yeah. You know? It's like, there's no question about who.
I can see that she's a woman you could get obsessed about, though. And, yeah. And especially in this scene that she's working at. I mean, she's...
Oh, she is. She's fucking
I totally see the working. And then there's the little flash of the girl she used to be like, yeah, but it could work, right? Where she suddenly becomes that innocent girl again. And, you know, I could see that, depending on who knows how much of this is real... Or it isn't, but, you know.
Strapinis says she's like a snake. Not slimy, but sure looks that way.
Yeah.
She always looks sticky.
Yeah, and sparkly.
A little wet, yeah.
She's got some scales on
her. She played trashy in a recent movie called Conviction with Sam Rockwell.
Okay. You know, I just saw that at the video store. I almost picked it up because I've never heard of it.
If you like a powerhouse Sam Rockwell performance, you'll
and
like
she's
that
in it? She's not the female lead, though.
No,
someone
no,
else
no.
Is.
She's one of the Law and Order characters that helps her on her way to finding the answer.
Okay.
One of those kind of things. But she plays, like, trailer trash, and she kind of fucks him over.
She...
And...
Go ahead, sorry.
End of story.
Anyway.
I was going to say, I do have to give her, the character, at least enough credit to say, like... She fucks with him during that scene, but she does, in the end, tell him to, you know, get over it, get lost. Yeah. Like...
Dr. Yeah. Submarine says, video store? Is that like Netflix?
Yeah. It's funny. I've only recently started going to a video store again, which I haven't done in like a decade, and it's actually quite refreshing. It really feels like I'm going to some kind of retro thing, like I'm going to right. I feel like I'm going to the silent movie theater or something, going to the video store. But it really is great to see that there's, you know, there's a guy behind the counter who knows everything about every movie ever made. There's a, you know, Quentin Tarantino of the future, dude, you know, who's putting up these eclectic things on the screen just because that's what he wants to watch. You know, I walked in the other day, he was playing Willow. And I'm like, wow, who even knows that movie exists anymore? And it came to the end credits, and I'm checking out, and in the end credits of Willow were playing, and he goes, got to do the Willow dance. And he started doing this little dance to the end credits.
Did you walk into an independent film?
Yeah, the two of us were like doing the Willow dance, and I was like, yeah, all right, I'm home. All right.
Where do you rent your videos from?
Odyssey Video, Marina Del Rey, man. There's a guy who'll do the Willow dance if you ask him nicely.
They have a back room over there.
Yeah, oh, they do have a back room. Haven't seen it, but I'm sure it's quite a collective. There's probably another guy back there who'll do a different dance.
Well, there's always a creepy guy with glasses who's
He's just always standing there. Yeah, he never buys anything.
Trey is the requisite creepy guy with glasses at the video store.
Yeah, that's me. And
that's
the hat.
That's him.
You can tell by the fedora.
Yeah, the fedora.
So here's this guy. Didn't I throw you out once already? Mm-hmm.
Ooh. And I like how he uses his piece of information to almost not get beaten.
Yeah,
out.
See, it's like you can see how what, a, like, all right, what a slickster he is. Like, okay, hey, no, I got this one thing. I'm going to play this one card.
What happened there, man? He's like, oh, fucking politics.
Yeah, totally. You know, he's like, he almost gets a sale, too. Yeah. He almost gets there.
The thing is, he's probably succeeded before.
Yeah. It's like, you know.
I like that he's still nice enough that he's like, lets him take off his jacket.
Yeah, not in the eyes, you know.
Just not the eyes. Just not the eyes.
Now, this is the thing. I keep looking at this thing. Are his boots actually part of his pants? Are his leather boots and pants one thing?
Which guy, Wesley Snipes?
No, Ralph Fiennes.
Oh. Uh-huh.
It's like they keep doing these shots from head to toe of his boots, and I swear it looks like his boots and his pants are the same thing. Like, there's no actual boots. Like, he's got some kind of pants that are boots, which seems like a completely impractical concept, and yet cool in a weird way.
How do you get into them? Do you step into them from behind like a spacesuit?
I think so. You have to leap down on them. You have to stalk them from like a second story and like leap down on them. There we go. Now that's the club I want to go to. Now see, they keep doing these head-to-toe shots and they go by so fast.
Oh,
I'm like,
dang it.
I can't see. There was one right there. And there she comes. And one of the few cool limos that ever existed. You know, this kind of like this kind of Jaguar limo. You know.
Plus, it's bullet resistant.
Yeah. What happened to bulletproof?
It seemed pretty bulletproof, though, later when they were filling it full of AK-47 rounds and it didn't actually penetrate.
So, I guess if they just kept going a little bit longer, it probably would have changed from proof to resistant.
I think that chick over there was a precursor to Avatar.
I think so. Yeah. That's totally a Navi coming
in.
There she is. Look at that Navi on the left.
Navi on the left would be a good rap song.
Navi on the left. There's a Navi on the left. And I want you all to come.
Slightly better than Chewie in a spacesuit rocking out.
That's not slightly better. That's much better.
A lot better.
I didn't like that joke when it happened, but I remember it. I forget nothing.
Now you have to as well. You have to remember.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen.
Is it, right?
If you ignored our warning.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, here we go.
And you have not watched this movie before.
Eric gets up to go.
Eric's leaving the room.
He's excusing himself.
He can't deal.
Yeah, I don't want to say strap in, but strap in.
Pardon
strap
the
on.
Expression.
Oh,
no, not that.
No, now you've ruined it. A sensitive scene like this, and now you've just gone with your crude humor.
So, I wonder how terribly powerfully awkward this must have been for the actress.
I can't imagine shooting a scene like this. I have a hard time.
A sex scene is already really tricky.
It's got to be such a difficult
thing.
And
then a rape scene is really, really tricky.
Sure,
and then a rape scene
looked at that.
With this giant camera rig right in your face.
Yeah.
Then again, she's blindfolded. On a sci-fi level,
that's a blessing in a way.
On a sci-fi level, the interesting bit about it, as far as the idea goes, is that he's making her experience it too.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's
which is horrifying.
That's the really over the top.
Yeah.
That's the twisted part. That's the super twisted part.
I agree. This is cool too. Oh man, like stepping around the balcony
the special camera rig.
It's ridiculous.
It's amazing. But it's true that it's one of those things. It's okay. It literally is okay. Taking the one concept.
Someone's pulling focus too, by the way. On
taking the one concept and extrapolating, okay, what sort of variations would there be and what would and come up with this? Like, you know what?
What is powering the camera?
That's amazing.
What if you did this? Probably a very small battery that, you know, doesn't,
I would like
doesn't
to think,
make it all total
it
more than 8 pounds.
To me, I'd approach it like you want to fit as much as you can on like a backpack or something.
Yeah, I think that's part of what it is. Is it might be their backpack
and just comes over your
goodies.
Shoulder.
Again, if you get the actual DVD, she describes it. There's a talk that she's giving that she describes in great detail.
I should check that out.
About it.
The camera rig?
Yeah.
That sounds cool. Maybe it's on YouTube. Matt? Hi, Matt.
Hey, why isn't he here?
I can see you through your speakers. Mm. Hi, Matt.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so
yeah.
So here it comes.
There goes the gun. She's running. There's a hidden cut there.
The scene that disturbs people at Skywalker Ranch. I mean, can you imagine, like, okay, if you're not inclined to like this kind of scene after all, to have to do the Foley?
Oh, no.
I was going to make that joke earlier, but I didn't want to.
Okay, how far do we go with the Foley exactly? I mean, what do you want?
Ooh. Especially when he tases her in the junk right here, and I'm like, what?
Yep. It's
just not
it's just
nice.
A brutal scene, and I have to say I'm morally ambivalent as to whether it needs to be this brutal because it's like you know if nothing else it's like does this you know this character other than you want to go well she's a whore so fuck her you know it's like does this character does not deserve this fate at all
anyway I think you need something this strong to have it be
There's got to be this
change his entire worldview.
He's
jaded to begin with, so you have to outjade him.
Plus, it's like we gotta stop this guy. Like we gotta. This is not. I mean, in a world filled with crime already, it's like
that is the justification that I guess makes it kind of sense. That it's the only thing that gets through to him is like, wow, you know, wait a minute.
You gotta watch out for people with fanny packs. I think that's the real lesson here.
If you didn't know that before this movie,
yeah.
So, Chris, she doesn't know what the Mace driving, and you know, hey, where do you think George Lucas got the idea for Mace Windu as a name? But tough black person named Mace. So, you know, the fact that she, what is she, what is image is she getting? You know, it's like the, she's
well,
driving.
She's getting
it,
this.
He, well, right. No, he, you know, thank God she's not. But, you know, he's saying these things and she's like, what in the hell is he looking
oh,
at?
Oh, right you there? Mean.
Mace. I'm talking about Mace.
Okay,
not,
yeah, 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 right. Sorry.
Not,
what does
girl.
She think he's watching?
Yeah. You know, the fact that, you know, he's shocked by it. What could it be that shocked him? You know, because you see her reactions going, what in the hell? You know.
And of course, he's opening his eyes so he doesn't have to see it as clearly.
Yeah, but it won't go away. But yeah. I love the line later when she's throwing it back at him. She goes, "Well, it's the dark end of the street. How do you like it?"
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah, absolutely.
Like, yeah, you're a tough guy now. Uh-huh. You're so tough. This is where this leads.
I'm not sure if I buy the just shirt as the choking device completely, but it's doing its job there.
Yeah.
So.
It's
there's a very weird thing, like her eyes when he opens the eyes, like the pupils are like super black, like
yeah.
The like, black levels on those are deeper than anything in the rest of the shot, which is a very weird thing. And then it turns out to be an effects thing where we go into it and look at the reflection,
yeah.
And that's probably why. But it makes it especially creepy.
Chat room people, did we lose you? It's got awfully quiet in there.
Maybe they're just enthralled.
Creepy.
That's
she's
a tough,
doing a really good.
She's
job
doing a good death
dead.
Stare too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like I said, this actress is. It's possibly the more fearless performance in this movie.
Because her parents saw this movie.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah, I mean, a big star in a big movie, $40 million. And it's hard to say. I mean, you know, I don't remember this movie being advertised especially much, and obviously there, Ralph Fiennes wasn't a big star, and Angela Bassett wasn't a big star, and Catherine Bigelow wasn't a big name, and. You know, it's like it just kind of came and went. But, you know, I think the other half of it being like the people who did see it kind of went, oh, fuck, no way. Don't you know, word of mouth might
I'm not sure if I can recommend
very
it.
Very negative,
se.
You know, who knows?
Yeah.
Well, like I said, I.
Eric, you can come back.
It's one of those movies that, you know, I'm fascinated by it, and I think it's an amazing piece of work. And
well,
now that we're past the hump,
by the way,
pardon the expression. Hey!
I threw stuff at Trey.
That wasn't even deliberate.
Bear in mind, I saw this movie at work. I was like, oh, Strange Days.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
People are looking over your shoulder. What do you got there?
My hand to God, the producer that I'm working for, walked by right then.
Oh, nice.
And he's like, what are you watching? I'm like, Strange Days. It was awesome. And then it got rapey. Sorry?
That's how it is
yeah.
For the second
directed
half.
By Oscar
really
winner Catherine Bigelow, you jaded motherfucker. So, yeah, it's only 15 years after you make a movie like this that tanks and is universally reviled for its horrifying, you know, graphic sexual content. 15 years later, you get out of jail
you know,
and you win an Oscar.
I bet you this movie did get a lot of flack for that, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Like
huh.
I said.
Oh, big time.
Like I said, the, you
just
know.
Wouldn't have thought of it. I wasn't around for the reception.
Yeah.
I'm sure it got a lot of
like
shit.
Like I said, you know, I knew a woman doing Foley on it who was already judging it like,
It's a weird thing. I guess I'm just sort of very... I don't know if trusting is the right word in a movie and perhaps a rating system there, therefore. But yeah.
Well,
I was watching
this
it.
This
was going to
be an
like,
R from the get-go.
Well, yeah, yeah.
No, it wasn't going to be an R.
I mean, seeing this for the first time, not knowing that's coming, you know, I hear, like, I was reading stuff online, people just getting up and leaving during that scene
yeah.
and stuff like that. And,
yeah.
I was just sort of like, okay, well, that's fucked up, okay. And maybe it's like, well, you know, I've seen Seven, I guess. Like,
yeah.
But it's like...
Seven doesn't actually
like,
show
right,
you the things you know. That are happening, though.
Right.
That's this movie just says, here it is, you know.
Yeah,
the movie's kind of saying the same thing to you. Like, here we are, the dark end of the street. How do you like it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I kind of just went through it. I'm like, okay, well, and I'm just assuming that the movie has a good enough reason to have done a scene like
yeah.
that, you know, and then we find
And it
out.
Is a choice because they could have cut away to his reaction
sure. oh, yeah.
50% more of the time, and it
Absolutely.
Wouldn't have been nearly as graphic, and, you know, it would have been probably more horrifying in its way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a choice. It's,
but you always
it's
talk
a clear
about
choice.
How much you sort of agonize over things in the edit. I wonder
yeah.
how much, like... There must have been a lot of voices in the edit room that
oh,
that
yeah.
week.
I can't imagine there couldn't that wouldn't be the case. Yeah, just sort of like, well, you know, and it's covered in a way where you kind of go, well, clearly they were able. It was covered so that it could be those decisions could be made. They're
yeah.
not locked into anything.
Sure,
they could have avoided showing virtually anything, and it could have been just. I mean, they literally could have shown Ralph Fiennes just reacting, and you would have filled in the blanks with God knows what in your head.
And,
they kind of do
that holdout reveal thing later when it's the footage of Jericho
Lewis?
One getting shot
yeah.
where he watches it and it's just like, you have to see this.
Yeah.
And we don't
see it
till
she
see
sees
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's Chinatown, so forget
it. That's right. It's totally Chinatown. Now again, it's like, what's great about this scene, if you see it the second time, is the way that, you know, Mr. Sizemore is manipulating this whole thing. He's feeding it in the direction. He's the one who's feeding it in the direction that he wants it to go.
So. Palpatining it.
He's totally palpatining it.
Yeah.
he's palpitation the whole thing. Now, this movie is, it's one of those things, I can't remember, name for me if you can, a movie that is this brutal and, you know, down and dirty and thrillery and is this beautifully shot. I mean, this is just a gorgeous looking movie.
It's a nice looking movie. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's got all these fantastic looks to it and these, you know, great.
Seven would apply.
This is very
seven.
Much
seven
more
is
colorful.
Pretty.
This has got a lot of just neon.
It's a noir with color.
Yeah.
it's a colorful noir. And then
it's a neon noir.
Sizemore's final thing is like, you know, the fact that he's talking about this killer, and of course he's talking about himself, spoiler, but he says, someone's thinking about you way too much.
Uh-huh.
It's like, it's him. He's talking about himself.
Right.
It's fantastic. Yeah. Hey, where are the lights from the elevator coming from?
Shh.
That's noir. That's when you've got a smoky elevator shaft with bright lights in the elevator that aren't actually in the elevator. That's noir for you. Now, I have to say that this guy who supposedly is so paranoid, he has pretty lax security. You can just hop in the elevator. I mean, he could have come upstairs with an entire SWAT team.
I think this guy had the same club in The Crow.
Might well be.
So let me ask you
something. And she dresses casually at home just like she does on stage. You got to respect that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, these people never change their outfits. It's amazing, these people.
This is actually like remarkably similar to the last scene in terms of this is just him going and telling her, hey, I think you're in danger.
It is a little bit of a repeat, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if these could have been consolidated into just one scene.
Well, he's got the new information that Iris is dead. That's the new thing.
Right.
That's what he's come to tell her, is that this is getting worse because Iris has been killed.
Mm-hmm.
Bear in mind, all along she knows. So imagine how sick of him she really is. She's like, dude, I can't tell you why I'm so sick of you.
I believe that's where the next scene, after they take him out, you know, that's when we find out the next reversal, which is that she knows more about it.
And
she confronts Philo and says, look, I'm trying to keep him out of it. And Philo goes, I'd love to keep him out of it. He says, he keeps fucking showing up.
And I'm glad for that scene, because otherwise, if you didn't have that, then you'd just be like, what do we... Yes, he's a douche. She doesn't want to come. All right, we're done.
Like, yeah.
Move on, you know.
It is... You have to give... Rafe's character, I guess, whether or not you can admire him for it, but boy, talk about a guy who just won't quit. talk about stupid courage. Talk about, god damn it, I know I'm right. If the rest of you would just stop beating me up long enough to recognize that I'm right, this would be so much a better world. I do kind of feel for Michael Wincott in this scene. I mean, I'd be pretty like, Jesus, dude, already with the forget it.
Yeah.
Don't you understand? I am a rich record producer and stuff. I manage rap stars. We're just about to invent bling. It's a very exciting time here. She's not going
to
go back
to
you.
I'm about to buy some security for my elevator.
Yeah, I need to get a new
locks on the door.
Get a padlock for the elevator. That's my next thing I'm going to do. Next on my to-do list. Invent bling.
Dude, whoever invented bling is doing pretty well.
There's some guy coming up later. He's got a thing he wants to sell me. It's something to do with Krunk. I don't know what that's about, but I hear it's going to be hot. And then locks on the elevator, and that's my day.
Woo! Party sci-fi!
There's a lot of dialogue. We're moving along, and every scene's important and everything, but it's kind of, There's a lot of exposition.
You mean there's talking in this movie?
Oh, I thought it was just a kissing nipple movie. So she actually is, again, I've seen this movie several times. I still am not quite clear on where she comes out. You know, I think in terms of Juliette Lewis, I guess there is, you know, somewhere deep inside she does still have this affection for him. And she, you know, she does like the fact that he keeps coming back and still cares about her. But I think that's all she wants. I get the way I finally analyze it is that that's all she wants, though. She'll never go back with him. She just likes the fact that he won't
right.
give up.
Yeah,
you know, it's just a little validation for her.
You know, he can't give her what she wants, which is you know, success or whatever. Like that, this guy is going to facilitate for her.
after a while, it kind of becomes not important because it's not about getting her back. You know, the movie's certainly not about
I'm just talking about it, what her character herself motivation is. You know, obviously she's an opportunist and she's going to go with whatever the best thing is.
Sure.
But then she ends up with Max, which seems like a bad decision. You know?
Right.
So that's a differently motivated
Pavlich
thing.
Wonders if she's just trying to protect him.
She is trying to protect him. That's why she's trying to get rid of him.
Yes.
I'm just talking about her overall thing.
Her feelings for him.
You know, especially why she would end up with Max, because obviously that's a bad idea. That's a bad trade to be with Max. So you get the impression that the Max thing is legitimate feelings that she has. There's a line here. We're not watching the subtitles, but if you're watching the subtitles, there is the great punchline, literally, where he says, "We tried to find a smaller girl to beat you up, but it was short notice." Such a great little talk about insult to injury.
Yeah.
So again, it's like, you know, they keep her around in her bustier to beat up people.
Whoa.
So here we go. Here's why you have an Angela Bassett around.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Zoe.
Yeah. And there you go. Angela Bassett
and Gina Torres.
And
who
Gina
wins?
Torres in, well, just in a movie. How about, you know, Sisters or something? Who's with me?
I'm there.
You look like
absolutely.
As long as she's
crime
married,
fighting ass kicking sisters.
As long as she's married to Alan Tudyk.
Okay.
I want him to be there.
She can't be married to
and
Lawrence Fishburne.
And not die.
Okay.
Serenity spoilers in 10 seconds ago.
Yeah. Warning: in the past, there will be Serenity spoilers. I'm still mystified by the boots.
Those boots weren't made for walking.
Now, there was a whole scene. There's very few deleted scenes, but there was a whole scene that went right there, which is, as long as this movie is, thank God they cut a few scenes. Mm-hmm. And it really was an unnecessary scene because it was a scene that went on and on and on, at the end of which nothing was learned. So it was one of those scenes where you kind of go, oh, well, that really could go. But it got more into the technology of how the box works, because he watches and they watch the damn Iris scene again, God help us. In which he tries to boost the gain to try and see the killer better,
oh,
you know.
I see.
And it's this whole thing, and it's just this very, you know, very artistic sequence that goes on forever, where he's trying to boost the gain at the risk of a plot point that's going to come up later, where it's if you boost the gain, you can fry your brain. Boost the gain and fry your brain, as Johnny Cochran used to say. And they just cut that all out, and, you know, thank God. Good choice.
Yeah. I agree. Even though it would be an interesting kind of like exploration of like trying to CSI the.
It absolutely is. That's exactly. It's the Blade Runner move left enhance scene.
Uh-huh.
But boy,
yeah, you don't need it.
Totally unnecessary.
Nice,
but again,
nice
on the
to not have to go into
on
that.
The DVD. Check it out. It's there. Now here's where again it's like, okay, well, as those we were questioning, like, what's Juliette Lewis's motivation and what's Ray Fiennes' motivation? Seriously, what is Mace's motivation? Man, she is in love because she really is like. Oh, God. Why do I like this guy? What am I thinking?
He's a lost puppy. She's a basset hound.
So I see what you did there. She's an Angela Bassett hound. Wah, wah. Just to.
You know, I
want
to go back
joke.
To her childhood and make that joke because I don't think she got it.
Because I'm sure she never went to the third grade.
Guys, invent time travel so I can zing her real good.
That's when you find out Bassett's a stage name, and, you know, she didn't have that name since she was 24.
She was Shih Tzu until then.
Yeah. Now, this is, talk about a scene that gives you 10,000 miles of exposition one shot.
Yeah.
You know.
This is a dense, like, 30 seconds of exposition.
It's amazing. It's an amazing piece of work.
How do you get this look? Is this slow-mo with a long shutter?
I think it's just normal. You just double every frame or triple it or, you know. It's just kind of stuttery, you know.
I guess the kid tells you how long ago it was. I mean, so there's the kid, and then we're going to see the kid again. So he, what is that? 5 years, give or take.
Mm-hmm. Is the kid at the end that jumps on the cop's back?
I believe it is. Yeah, but we see him later. You know, because obviously when they go to her place, you know, we see.
Yeah,
we
he's
see
playing with the sparklers.
Yeah,
and
we're
going
to go to Aunt So and So's house and all that. Okay, so now here again. Once again, you know, God damn you, Cameron. For taking the concept and exploring it. Again with the boots.
Pretty sure I wasn't looking.
Pretty sure I saw a seam where the pants ended.
So, but again, taking the idea is like, okay, next level of craziness of this technology is the guy is going to come. You'll see him sneaking up on you just now while you were asleep.
It's so freaky.
That'll freak your world out. And again,
That is freaky.
I love the construction is, look at what happened. He called him for no particular reason.
Sure.
Because this is hopefully how he'll see in the window the tape that he wants him to see.
It
all makes perfect sense in retrospect.
It also could be that he's wanting to see if it's already happened, if he's found it.
Yeah. Maybe. Hey, so what's up? Yeah. Yeah, what's new? Oh, look at that, right by the phone. There seems to be an envelope for me.
Exactly. It's surprising how effective it is when it's like, you know, this happened already, and he's okay.
Yeah, it's still,
but
it's like,
still scary as hell. Yeah.
It's a great setup because it's like, you know, it's there's an old urban legend about you know, the guy who has the awesome car, and he has this whole security system where it's all chained down and blah blah blah, and comes into the garage one night and it's all chained down, but it's been turned around. It's been reversed and chained back down with a note that says, if we want the car, we'll take it.
Sure.
So it's that kind of idea. It's like the killer is going, I could kill you anytime. Mm-hmm. I can get right to you. My whole goal is to make you think about it. So. I have to say that there's this whole idea of, you know, he's got, when we go to Tick later, he's going to go, oh, you know, something's wrong with this guy's brain, which is another clue because, of course, Sizemore got shot in the head, and that's why he's no longer a cop.
That actually is real. That is accurate lockpicking equipment. Yeah. Although he just is a little faster.
But they talk about how he's messed up in the cerebral cortex because he's got this blue look to everything, which I never quite got because, you know.
I thought it was just a look.
That,
yeah,
it was like the playback look.
I thought they established later on though that he was colorblind.
They do.
He says, "I didn't realize you were colorblind."
Yeah,
so.
Okay.
In the chat,
but I never got when you're looking through his playback that it looked especially different. Here you really get the colorblind effect of it. You know,
I don't know, Ryan, how's it looking for colorblindness?
I can't tell.
There you go. in the chat room,
JK LOL
Strapenis points out there are a lot of shots of the feet. I guess they are meant to be moments when the characters are particularly grounded.
I just think they're trying to show us that he has these awesome boots that are part of his pants.
Yeah, they made the boots, and they're like, fucking these boots.
Yeah.
Production designers are going to get pissed if we don't show the boots. Guess that'd be costume designer. Yeah. Awesome.
But, I mean, that's
you're right there with him as soon as he wakes up, and he's like, where's my gun?
That's the worst mindfuck of all. It's just like, he just showed up to say, I could have killed you. For no other particular reason. Just to make it crazy.
Everyone wasn't already paranoid enough.
This is a joke that most movies don't take the time to make, and I'm glad they made it. I'm really glad that they did this.
Going back to get the clip. And I didn't, because you don't know the first time, at least me, I didn't get what he was, you don't know what he's doing right there, where he looks at the bottom and then just kind of like, shit.
Slides back out. Okay, there we go.
Yeah, okay, that'll do it.
Because he's total focused, like serious and badass mode.
It's like, wow, I'm really rusty at this. Damn. Really rusty. Hello. Here's the second of three references to his tie, which is a payoff, of course, for the big ending.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, of course, again, if you on your second viewing of the movie, you'll notice that the very first thing that you see Sizemore say to him is, "Hey, nice tie."
Yeah,
that's like virtually the first line after he's run off the lawyer guy. Says, "Nice tie," you know.
Uh-oh.
To which I say, "Nice foreshadowing."
Uh-huh. Hey, the black cops keep beating up a white guy.
Yeah, that's not right.
For apparently having a shopping cart.
This is one stretch of Hollywood Boulevard that, boy, just stop driving down this stretch of Hollywood Boulevard. It's a bad place.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a car on fire. Who is burning the cars on Hollywood Boulevard?
Oh, man, you can't go down La Cienega. There's always like four or five burning cars there.
Yeah.
Take Fountain. There's one or two.
If I'm on La Cienega and I see my first burning car, I just know it's going to be worse from there on out. Yeah, that's exactly. When I duck left and I take Adams.
When the tanks are rolling through?
Yeah, when the tanks are out, I immediately just go south and get on to Adams usually. Yeah. Martin Luther King if I have to.
But only if.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is bad.
I think it took me a long time to kind of get old the idea. You know, just to notice the nice level of detail that, you know, the recording squid is different than the playback squid.
Mm-hmm.
The recording squid is much more sensors and much thinner, and the playback squid is a much more like a bicycle helmety thing.
It's more durable.
And obviously it has the the recording squid is meant to pick up the tiny little signals, and the playback squid is meant to boost them back into your brain. So the playback squid is more beefy than the recording one.
The other part of the colorblindness thing is right there. They're like looking at his like the recording's like scopes, and they're like, oh,
he's look, he's got to know it's a thing. He's got to.
But did that come back later as like being an important deal? I don't.
Well, it's a clue. It's a clue that it was Sizemore, because Sizemore was shot in the head, and his brain has been screwy ever since.
Oh, I miss that. I guess. Yeah.
That's why he's not a cop anymore. He was shot in the head with a .22, so obviously, you know, survived it.
You know what this technology would be used for that no one in the movie thought of? Blind people getting to watch movies.
Blind people getting to, well, do anything.
Yeah, but watch movies. They could watch Strange Days.
That would be the surrogate's equivalent.
Yeah, you'd wear the headset and record yourself sitting in front of a television watching.
Yeah, you'd
movie.
Have to bootleg it. Yeah.
Oh man, he's getting up to go pee again. I'm gonna miss that part. Damn it. I wish he was eating popcorn.
That actually would be really,
really great right now.
Well, actually, no.
In the chat room, someone says, "And Jews eating bacon."
Sure. There you go. Actually, you know what the technology would be for? You would put the sensor on your dog and watch it in real time.
Oh.
And that's how you get around.
The real time factor, too, is kind of just using it as a portable viewing method. Yeah. That's kind of interesting.
The idea on Battlefield, like you could see anyone's POV from any position.
Right.
Perhaps?
They don't necessarily set up that you could. Well, yeah, because he puts it on the victim and the victim sees it live. So you can do it live. Yeah.
We'll do it live.
And then he fucks it and does it live.
We'll do it live.
Wow.
I got zingers on a card, guys.
Yeah.
Let's see. Elemental PQR, rape. That was your Rolodex of jokes. I wasn't sure if that was clear.
Did you just go PQR? PQR, you're right.
Elemental PQR, yes. Yeah. I know the alphabet, Teague. Thank you.
I don't.
And here's that guy from Full Metal Jacket again.
I do love how fucked they end up here. Yeah. Where it's like, we're in a car and it's on fire.
He should try to bribe them with a Rolex.
Yeah. Shit.
Yeah, it's a brilliant...
drive it into the water.
Yeah, it's an amazing
not on fire
stunt
anymore.
Scene. Yeah, this chase scene coming up is brilliant.
Yeah.
And the ending especially, of course, is fantastic.
Eric, you're awfully quiet. Are you being captivated?
I'm sorry. It's terrible. I find myself just kind of watching the movie. I should have... If I'd known before yesterday that I was going to do this, I would have done just that. I would have watched the movie before.
Got it out of your system?
When I was watching this the first time, I was like, what the hell? His chest just sparked when they shot him. And then I was like,
I'm dumb.
And it's like, oh, he's wearing a vest.
I'm dumb. That makes perfect sense now.
Dang it!
Where was I when I was right there? Yeah. Get the truck.
It's a little peculiar the way this next part is just the way the editing makes it look. It seems like she really deliberately sees the end of the dock and goes for it and tries to stop short of it.
I agree. I felt the same way when I saw it.
And I was like, oh, wow, what's her plan here? And then she's kind of like,
oh,
shit, the end of a dock! And I'm like, really?
I thought you were the, okay. I could have sworn you knew.
I thought you had this figured out. Yeah. Now, I wonder if... setting a bullet-resistant car on fire really poses an immediate threat to you.
Hmm.
It makes you hot, I guess. It'd be like an
oven. Well, the gas tank.
Over a mm-hmm. Oh, that's what they... Yeah, the gas tank was going to blow up. That was the whole thing. Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Is the gas tank bulletproof?
That should be the first thing.
What sort of explosion is it rated for?
I would think if you got...
Didn't the Mythbusters do a whole thing about the challenges
you can't,
of trying
you can't
to
blow
up
a gas tank?
Yeah.
Even with incendiary bullets, with tracer bullets, you can't make a gas tank explode.
Right. Well, I mean, isn't it a whole thing with gasoline itself is not...
It's the vapor. It has to be the vapor.
Yeah. It's not like if you just throw a match into an oil drum of it, it doesn't blow up. Exactly,
yeah, unless it's warm enough that there's lots of vapor. Yeah.
It'll just burn on the top of it.
Yeah. For a long time. One of those great sort of movie moment lines is when he's... I love the fact that he just starts whining like, oh, he's so paranoid, Lenny. Don't be so paranoid, Lenny. He's mocking her for mocking him.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then he's getting all freaked out, and she just has that tough chick, you know, relax, baby, this is what I do. It's just, you know, all right, I'll give you that one. That's movie dialogue 101. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Darn, there's no way around him on this, you know, 30-foot-wide dock. Crap.
Well, they don't have any tires.
Yeah,
additionally, it's got kind of a wide turning radius to that limo.
It kind of does. Doesn't turn on a dock.
It doesn't flip a bitch very well.
And this is in a minor way. I think this is anyone with me. This I would characterize this as not an end of the movie, but a subplot moment of surprising and obvious. It's like you're kind of like, how in the hell are they getting out of this one?
Right.
You know,
right? Yeah.
There's no way they're going to get out of this.
I wasn't thinking about it.
Yeah.
And then
the answer, as soon as you see her get the idea, I think you get the idea, and you're like, oh shit, oh okay, uh-huh. I guess now that is a better option. So.
And it's like, okay, now how do we get out of this situation?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But,
you know, she's very pragmatic, you know, because she says, well, the fire's out, isn't it? You know, one step at a time. Come on.
That's pretty cool. You just get some flame bars right around the windows there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Real fire.
Yeah. They don't dwell on that very long either, the predicament of being stuck in the burning car. Like,
yeah.
they don't draw it out too much.
And then, yeah, by golly, they set a limo on fire and dumped it in the water, and mm-hmm. good for them. $42 million, ladies and gentlemen, in 1995. You can do things.
That's what that gets you.
How do you rig a limo to drip like that? Is it just like a bunch of holes in the roof, and they're just pouring water on it?
That's one
probably.
Way.
Probably. Because, of course, the
half submerge it in a tank.
Well, that's that. I wonder if it's in it. Yeah, I would.
It's not actually fully. You know, it's not fully submerged. I mean, this is
no.
But
then
faking it,
but. The interesting thing is then that you have to seal up the car, which is a whole different you know sort of thing you have to work out.
It's one of those scenes that shooting it, you know, it's
easy to write, very difficult.
It's a different kind of scary than shooting a rape and murder scene, but yeah, it's a scary I could handle more. I'd be like, oh, I'm totally down with getting inside the sunken automobile and flooding it. I'm down with that. I worked on The Abyss. I can handle it. I can deal with it. I you know, I basically live that scenario anyway on The Abyss, but you know.
Mm-hmm. Strapping on the POV cam.
Yeah,
and
that's not so much part
scene.
Of my worldview.
Yeah.
So far as
you know, the next time I kill someone. And I throw them in the water.
Get a GoPro.
And I see them go down
under
the water. You know what I'm going to do before I walk away? I'm going to wait an hour.
Yeah.
Because this always happens.
They're never dead.
They're never
dead. Well, that's why I thought when I was watching this, it would have been cool if they had a bit of dialogue. It's like, it's been 20 minutes.
Yeah.
They would have come up by now. And they just didn't
or that
see
they're
it.
Sirens and they have to get going or something like that.
Yeah.
Movies are bullshit.
But then there's a nice little reversal again where he's like, eh.
I saw that coming, though. I was like, as soon as he handed it to him, I'm like, he just gave him something
else. He just gave him some other one. You know, they're going to be pleased when they watch it.
Mm-hmm. They're like, damn it! Oh, let's go.
She's
like,
hot,
wait, let me just finish
She's
it.
She's hot. Wait a minute.
Might as well
let's rewatch
it.
The whole thing. This is good. I want to see how this ends. Now, one of the things, I admit that I, off the top of my head, I do not know the answer, and even a second viewing, which I did very recently, didn't clear it up for me, but... How are the cops? What trail of breadcrumbs are the cops following? Because they're at the club when he goes to see Faith for the first time. They're already at the club, and what are they doing at the club? Who are they?
Oh,
following?
Oh no, they're Iris had a videotape of the thing, and they were following Iris and also the videotape. When the videotape went missing,
because
she dumped it in his car. So now they're just tailing him.
Okay,
how exactly they're tailing him? I don't think.
But
we
also
know.
Also they know that. Now that they know who they killed, they know that that's his manager and mm-hmm. so on, too. So that's another possible reason.
Vincent
you
know, D'Onofrio. Because
who set them up with the hookers, and so that was the manager who actually did that.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
So that's another possible
way
of doing
it. The
way
it plays in the club is almost like they just sort of see him.
There's a guy!
Not like, you know, they were following him or whatever.
Yeah. Now, this is the New Year's party I'd go to.
Antoine Dodson.
I would totally go to this New Year's party. Hey, how's it going? As long as I'm with the, you know, the cool badass chick who, like, you know, gives me the okay that I can come in. He's with me. Okay, cool. Hey, how's it going? Pad, swing, wheels, gig, homie.
What?
I'm talking them down with the street lingo, the way the brothers do.
Excuse me, stewardess? I speak jive.
Yeah. See, even when she's casual, she's got the badass jacket on. Look at that thing. Little hand-painted thing.
That looks almost exactly like a jacket Hanel almost bought at Comic-Con.
If it was a jacket of her jacket, then I would totally buy it myself. What jacket is that? Angela Bassett wore this in Strange Days.
Oh.
Work it out. It's cool in the end.
So this
do the math. It's cool. When you come out the far end, it's cool.
This might be a totally dumb question, but if this tech existed, what is the thing that you would want to experience with it?
What I would want to experience with it?
Yeah.
Skydiving.
Because you
can experience skydiving.
No, I can't.
Okay, true enough. True enough. As someone
no,
who has...
actually, better yet, squirrel suit in the Alps. Those the
oh, the flying
yeah.
squirrels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah, something that you yeah yeah that'd be that thing is like you know something that you you don't have the training
the
for. Yeah. As someone who's had one skydiving experience and didn't enjoy the landing part of it very much.
I yeah. wouldn't enjoy any of it.
The rest of it's cool. The rest of it's awesome. I enjoyed everything except for that last microsecond was really bad.
Where you just go plunk.
Yeah, I Wile E. Coyote'd. There's an impression of me somewhere out in Paris Valley.
There's a
hole in the ground that's in my shape.
That's actually one thing that I appreciate about Independence Day of all things is like that's I think
that's
probably the most movie accurate portrayal
that
of a parachute landing.
That landing makes me hurt. Yeah.
He just crumples upon.
I don't think people understand that parachutes don't make a soft landing. They just keep you from dying when you hit the ground.
You know? You still have to do a whole thing. The square shoots that you can do a whole where you literally stall them.
Oh yeah,
I go whoop.
But I met a guy out there who if you hot dog it too much, you can stall like 10 feet off the ground and then just fall the last 10 feet.
Yeah.
I met a guy who broke his back doing that way.
But it looked cool right until then.
Now, here we go. Look at this shot. What the? I mean, like literally right down to the cleavage. I mean, it's amazing.
She must have her head bent back.
Yeah, she's got her head bent all the way back, and there's a camera guy hanging over her.
Jericho 1 did a bad acting job, though, because he looked at her. He's not looking at us.
Uh-oh. You know?
John Pavlich has an answer for your question, Eric, which was, what would you do with the tech?
Uh-huh.
Uh-oh.
His answer is, I'd fuck me so hard.
Oh, my God. Nice. Wait, you'd have sex with yourself?
You'd get someone to record it and then put that thing on, I guess. I don't know. Ryan, what would you do?
Getting to know you.
Nothing?
It's like sex with yourself. I thought I was imagining, like, you put one of those things on your junk.
Jesus.
What's my penis seeing?
I tell you what. You know what? I would go for that just to learn, like, as a learning experience, like watching, you know, your playback tapes of, you know, yourself playing football or something.
Oh, yeah.
So, like,
sure.
Just to learn, okay. That I'm going to work on that move. That didn't work out.
So cool.
Yeah, I thought that was so awesome, and yet now I see it does nothing.
This is a one or two, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we've had a hidden cut, at least one, just there, in fact. But most partly at least limited by the size of the magazine and the 8-pound custom camera that they made. But
it occurred to me, it's really... The gunshots coming up are pretty close range, even for
they
blanks.
Are. They're really frightening.
They're blanks, but like he his head gets touched by that poof.
Which is why I'm wondering if it's digital. Although God knows, you know.
I bet they really did it. I mean, hopefully it's just the thing where he's pointing a bit behind him, kind of a deal.
Yeah.
But
still, that's and to do it all in a one-er and not nearly controlled. It's like
yeah.
I kind of hope they didn't, quite frankly, because that's to me that's pushing the envelope.
God, it would suck if they were like right after he gets shot in the take, and then it's just like shit out of film.
Yeah. Take it again.
Fuck! How long for a reset?
Well, they go into a whole thing about how extensively they rehearsed all these things.
Oh, I'm sure they did it. It was like a stage play.
Huge,
did it like
huge
10
amounts
times.
Of rehearsal to get the timing right. Because for that, among many reasons, you don't want to roll out before you've actually gotten to the end of the scene.
Shoot him. We're waiting. We know what's going to happen.
He has the cheese grater line here, which is like, we're in the LAPD over cheese grater. Now, again, this is fun because here even reality itself plays into the conspiracy theory, which is totally bullshit. Is even after having seen this, we still are going to buy into the idea that this isn't just these two guys. It's a whole conspiracy for some reason. These guys were sent to execute him. Mm-hmm. Which in fact is not the case, that they're just douchebags. Mm-hmm. and that's
right.
that's the great I think the ending of this movie is what finally ultimately got me on board this movie the first time, because it takes everything that we just assume in a movie, like, oh yeah, the cops, conspiracy theory, no problem, right with you. It's the oldest, stupidest cliche in the book.
Uh-huh.
And the movie knows that, and the movie just assumes if you go cops, conspiracy, cover up, you go great, on it, I get it. Don't say another word. I'm way ahead of you.
This is amazing too. This
is incredible.
Right
in
front of the train,
chasing
thing.
Right past the train.
Yeah, seriously, how?
Yeah,
looks like they just
there's a
did
little
it.
Cut right there, but but passing the train, I think, is a guy running in front
and
of the train.
And when they were whipping before and after, but yeah, there's no way to fake that. I mean, that's
In '95, new.
Yep.
So
John Landis directed this, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. Everyone is this far away from being John Landis. So the. So anyway, the idea that the movie totally takes the assumption that we all will immediately make, like, oh, yeah, cop conspiracy, great, Mm-hmm. The government's behind it all. Fine. Down. Do it.
Right.
You know, and then at the end goes, no, that was all bullshit. I pulled that completely out of my ass. There's no cop conspiracy. You know, it's just genius that the movie did that. And the only thing wrong with that is, you know, in terms of that is if it turns out that it's not a vast conspiracy and it was just 15 completely unconnected things that were happening, which is what most of, and they just turn it into a conspiracy theory, is then they have to explain all the 15 things. You know, it's not like the cops did it all. Great, good, roll credits. So there is a lengthy exposition scene at the end of this movie that is, is pretty impressive. And the fact that the movie survives it.
I like the way it goes down because you always have the villain explain it right at the end, the James Bond cliche. I just like where he's like, oh, wait, before I kill you, you're going to appreciate this. Hold on. Yeah. So here's what happened, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm still going to kill you, but it's like,
he's like, we were friends forever.
You're
the only guy who can appreciate
this. You're
going to
get a kick out of this story. Yeah.
Let me tell you how much I fooled you. You know, I got to tell you this. You're not going to love it, but I want to tell you. It's too good not to share. So, but the fact that, this whole idea of conspiracy turns out to be, there was no conspiracy. You totally fell for it. You know, you, the audience, fell for it just like Lenny fell for it. Just that you automatically assumed, yeah, cop conspiracy. And there was none and never was. What movie does that? What movie doesn't take the easy road and go, yeah, cop conspiracy,
sure,
government conspiracy?
It's so easy to believe in this world, too, where it's just everyone's just,
You know, the fact that this movie dares to go, you know, sometimes you see a lot of, things and you go, someone must be behind it all. Sometimes no one's behind it. Sometimes it's just random people doing random bad shit. That's all it is. There is no conspiracy.
I wonder how much of a pain in the ass it is to rent a tank and drive it around the streets of L.A.
Let's find out.
Yeah.
It looks a lot like the vehicle that actually was used in a recent Asylum movie.
Really?
Which is some kind of faux armored vehicle that's not really a real armored vehicle. And here again, in retrospect, here's Sizemore, coming to check on his own handiwork, which he just did moments before.
Why is he wearing a suit?
Because it's New Year's and he's going to the party.
Yeah, he's doing the private security thing at the big ritzy party.
Now here's where Sizemore's character does the, invents.
My God, the lizard killed him!
He
got
killed by a gecko. I hope he's insured for that. Wah, wah.
Hey.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Do you?
So this whole thing, Sizemore's monologue, where he's literally pulling this entire thing out of his ass and stringing it together out of bits and pieces of nothing.
That shot, it's a great shot once you've seen it.
Shot
before.
Of the cook in Red October.
Yeah. And again, the shot of the cook in Red October only makes sense the second time you've seen it. The first time you're like, yeah, okay. There's a guy standing there.
Do you ever want to go back and show Thomas Edison a movie? Like, this fucking bullshit you're doing that's kind of dumb and you're filming trains coming into the station?
Let's move on from that.
Sure, yes, yes. I really put it that way, but...
Well,
let's go back and show him this.
No, that's what I mean. Exactly. It's like, hey, Tom.
What have I done?
This is the epitome of your art.
You know how you invented a bunch of shit so you could do this? Hey, Melia, but brothers, come here. Okay. I'm not even going to tell you. Just sit. Just watch.
just here we go. Check it out.
How do you explain to them how you shot this shit where... It looks like point of view footage. Like, everything about this would blow their mind.
Yeah. Well, the fact that there's sound and color.
Dude, Jurassic Park.
And black people.
Do it with Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw you show like Winsor McKay or, show Willis O'Brien Jurassic Park or, Peter Jackson's King Kong,
Yeah. They'd assume you somehow genetically engineered these creatures and really did it. Man, you must have done a lot of takes with that T-Rex to move him just right.
Yeah, it was really hard.
Get that performance,
Show him Avatar. And of course, Avatar would work too.
They'd also be freaked out. Peter Jackson's King Kong would be freaked out because, of course, they'd be looking at their own New York City, but in color.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
They're going to go, when did you shoot that?
You got great skies on the day.
New York City wasn't even in color until the 40s.
Yeah. I don't remember when you guys shot that.
And who is this fat guy, and why am I already annoyed by him? Show him 2012. This game is fun for every movie, basically. 2012, Jurassic Park, Avatar.
Yeah, Deep Throat.
The big effects movies, it gets even
Deep Throat.
Better and better.
He'll, look down at his palms in horror, these hands.
Well, I really would love to go back and take, J.J. Abrams' Star Trek to Roddenberry right before he did, the series or something.
Don't.
Wow.
Because that'll put a weird echo in the space-time continuum and be like, what I'm working on sucks.
Now, it would just create a new timeline where it's different. The old one would still exist off in its own.
If I found you at age, if I found you at age 14, about to make your first lightsaber video, and I sat you down and showed you RVD2, would you be like, "Oh man, yeah. Fuck it all"? Mine's gonna suck.
Never gonna beat that.
Exactly.
My version of that is, of course, one day I found myself thinking, wow, I wish I could go back to my teenage self and go, hey, you see that actress on TV? You're going to be making out with her on your couch in 20 years. And my 15-year-old would go, I'm going to own a couch? Like, actually own a piece of furniture? That's wild.
And you reach through the space-time continuum and high-five yourself.
Yeah, give myself a high-five.
You masturbating little bastard.
Smack myself in the head. So here we are heading into the third act based on a complete lie. That nothing that they're talking about is really true. That this guy's at fault and we got to stop this guy and this guy did it and this guy is the problem. We got to get this information to so-and-so. And virtually none of that's going to happen. We just,
Frank in the chat, I'm sorry, back in the, he said, show him the prestige. That'll really piss him off.
Ooh, good one. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. We'll show Houdini the prestige. That'll work. So she has a dress you at least you can't see completely through, because it's a special occasion.
It's scaly though. It's
a prude.
But it's skin tight and mini skirt, so it still applies. This from here on out, pretty much almost the entire movie. Yeah, she invented the throwing down the mic. She actually invented that in 95.
Stand. It's not like just
she's like on the stand. She's committing. I mean, my God.
Take that stand.
There's a hooker strut if ever I saw one. Good Lord. She's working that dress just as best as it can be worked. It's like a hand puppet, that dress. Now, where's Legolas guy? Legolas guy's gone.
He's in Lord of the Rings.
Not Legolas guy. There's a comedy there. But there's stairs leading up to that room. Where'd Legolas guy go? And how did he get there? That's bad planning.
He's hurt somewhere.
That never occurred to me.
Yeah. What's that movie? Wheelchair guy went down the stairs? That's why he's so amped up in that cage. He can't leave. He can't get out. And yet somehow he did.
He's had to watch evolution from above, silently detached.
That's the true mystery of this movie.
Where did he go?
So now she's giving at least a mostly true account. But even her version has got some bullshit to it. So in which we find out now, of course, let's see the pieces that we're getting from her, which is what that Philo was having Jericho One followed. That's he was the one who hired Iris to record what was happening. Then when Iris came back and said, "I got this whole assassination thing," he turned her away. That's how that worked, right? So then Iris went to Lenny after that.
Coming into focus.
One day I will kiss in a chromatic aberration.
It's a dream I have.
Aberration is a cool word. Down in Front is a great podcast.
Yeah.
I like how you connected those dots. My God, see, Iris just can't get a break. I'm sorry. Iris, we get to see Iris like in good shape for like one shot just there before she met Jericho One.
Right,
and the rest of her, the last 24 hours of her life.
You can see it start to burn him and he goes, fuck her.
Yeah. Oh. Yay.
Sort of like, yeah, shit. Still an actor.
Yeah. But Iris just had a bad, bad 24 hours there.
Oh, Iris. You shouldn't have been named Iris. That probably started up a big old long bad trend. Faith isn't a good name either.
No, not so much.
Word names aren't good. Although Dawn is cool.
Okay.
D-A-W-N.
Sure.
Just not Fran.
Okay, fair enough.
When these episodes come out weeks apart, that'll be
the
greatest callback ever.
Hopefully Frighteners comes back.
That's right.
Before this.
If it doesn't, it's just I was doing a Tarantino reference. I did the payoff, and then I'll do the setup in a later episode.
All right. Angela Bassett hasn't punched anyone in a while, so she's getting antsy. She's like, Lenny, I got to go punch somebody. Lenny, I haven't punched anybody in a while. My fingers are getting itchy.
He might be the only Lenny in cinema history that hasn't been either a moron or an asshole.
Well,
he's an asshole.
Actually,
he's kind of an asshole.
And a bit of a moron, too.
Yeah,
a bit
of a moron.
Can't think of any other Lennys except for there's Lenny and That Thing You Do.
Nah. Yeah.
Movie. Give us a plot point. We're drowning here.
Well, here's the bringing up the racial thing.
Is that Deborah Gibson from Mad TV?
Song about no white clouds in my blue sky. There's a lot of, you know, this movie's a lot about racial tension, which I guess isn't quite as in the forefront of the consciousness now, I guess. I mean, you tell me.
Well, I was going to ask you guys about that. You guys live here. I mean, do you feel that that's an issue?
For 95, this movie felt like very, yeah, this is probably how it's going to be. Mm-hmm. It probably will be helter skelter by 2000, you know. It probably will just be full-on black-white war in the streets. You know, and it didn't go that way because the rappers, instead of, you know, organizing, they just turned to bling. With a champagne bottle. I mean, come on. Ow. And then literally breaking it on his head. That's... Lenny's second only to Iris in terms of the amount of abuse he takes in this movie. And there's also not a single moment in the rest of this film, I don't think, in which some form of confetti or something is flying. And never once do you ever see anyone actually throwing confetti or streamers in the air. Oh, she changed to a different lingerie outfit. Now she's got her like copper tin man outfit on. Yeah.
There was a sequence in a music video I worked on where it's a narrow hallway and it's jam-packed with extras and the talents in the front singing his song or lip-syncing. And in the very back, the extras along the back row have bags of confetti. So they have their arms up. They're like, everyone in the hall is like raising the roof, right? But the back row of people are just pulling confetti out. Throw a little bit. Up.
Clever.
Up, throw a little bit. Up. And you watch the shot. It's just like it's raining confetti. But in the background and among those extras.
If you're really looking.
Matt Fedaveda. Matt Fedaveda is in the background with a bag of confetti. Just raising the roof, man. Throw some confetti. Raising the roof. Throw some more confetti. It's coming for me. Hey-o.
It's like a magic trick.
So if you want confetti, just ask Matt.
He knows how to do it.
I think he still has some in his hair.
He knows how to do it and not get busted for it.
Yeah.
Professional confetti thrower.
In the chat room, Matt Vader goes, oh, yeah!
She's got a jacket on. Now she's almost fully dressed.
Just as sparkly.
I'm just waiting. Never mind. Yeah, never mind. I was going to say I was going to wait for her to go jacket off, but...
Wait for some nipples. Just jump on that.
I'll wait for the nipples. Is there a penis in this movie? I could do that.
No.
No.
Fuck.
I think we're actually about out of...
below the belt nudity.
We're about out of nipples in this movie, too. We've come to one of our last ones.
That's what Sizemore is for.
Yeah, he'll help us out.
When you're out of nipples, just watch Sizemore.
Just watch Sizemore. Next best thing to nipples.
I don't think he'd appreciate that on a shirt.
Tom Sizemore, the next best thing to
nipples. What if we make that shirt and he's just, that guy's walking down the street one day and then bumps into Tom Sizemore and he's like, oh... This probably doesn't make much sense to you, does it?
Yeah. I'm getting punched in the head, aren't I? Yeah, pretty much going to get punched in the head.
Okay, bring it on. Not the eyes.
She's drinking like a wine cooler there. Look at that.
Yeah. There are several empty ones.
That's how you know it's the future. Yeah. Now, here we go. Here's basically the thematic summation of the movie.
Memories were meant to be forgotten?
Yeah. Which I think is great.
It is a great line. It surprised me with its depth. I was like, I was trying to watch an action sci-fi thriller.
The fact that she's going to wreck the tape. Oh, don't do that.
Not cool.
And then stomp on him. Oh.
That's why you can't have nice things. All right.
She's making a stand here. She's like, this is a tough love. This is a tough intervention here.
This is real time. Yeah. Time to get real.
Ooh. Ryan, you showed me a little something just there. You don't have guns like that, though.
I like her real time. No.
Ryan, can you throw me against the wall and use that voice again?
Yeah, please. I got a wig you can use. And then we'll record it and we'll sell it to people on the internet. This scene here is, again, it's one of those things where you go, oh, I thought this was a thriller, but now it's like some crazy kissing relationship movie. And it's I think it's a great, more deftly handled than the average Cameron romantic scene, of which there aren't
actually
that many.
Yeah, when you look at it that
but,
way.
But, you know, so who knows, you know. But this thing where they're both, you know, I get the impression, and part of it's how it's being acted and how it's being shot, but I get the impression that they both know what they're saying. You know, it's not like one person isn't getting what the other one is saying. Mm-hmm. They both know what they're doing, and they both know what they're talking about, and yet neither one of them is changing their minds about anything, you know. Where he's like admitting, like, okay, you love me, I get it, but I love Faith, and because you love me, you're still going to help me, right?
Yeah,
you know, which is which is a hard one to pull off, quite frankly. I think that's a pretty hard little paradigm to make work. And I think it does work. Possibly because the way he's approaching it is this, you know, he goes, I can't justify this. Look at it there, the way he's playing this off. It's like, I can't help this. This is just, I'm this. This is what I'm doing.
It's good performances here.
Well, you get those Oscar nominees in your thriller movie.
Yeah.
Who put ideas and acting in this fucking movie?
Yeah, Jesus.
I'm really sick of ideas and acting.
I came to see the explosions.
There's not even lens flares, really. It's just fucking chromatic aberrations. People making out
in
the lens flares.
Lens flare?
In my day, the lens flared.
Yeah. Yeah. What kind of cheap movie is this? That's not even a lens flare.
You call that a lens flare?
That could be a name in a sci-fi novel. Lens flare.
No. It couldn't. It couldn't be at all.
Never mind. Is this a kissing movie?
It's a kissing movie.
We got pretty deep into the movie before we had a scene like this, man. It's not like it was
Yeah.
Wow. More spotlights, please.
Yeah.
Is it possible this is a miniature?
No.
I think it's a real plate, and they comped in all the little...
Yeah, they comped in what you're about to see, which is this gigantic crowd.
Which is awesome.
So how much of this crowd is real? None of it?
I would think none of it, probably in this shot.
Christ, look at that. It's great work, though. Oh, you can see it jiggling.
Yeah, this is not a perfect track. Yeah,
it's very early. Okay, very early, this whole idea of digital crowd. Now, this is largely...
That's a party.
Yeah. Largely real. As much real as... Maybe around the edges, but otherwise, yeah. It's like four blocks. They shot like four blocks.
Ryan, where were you on December 31st, 1999?
Oh, wow. Ooh, for the millennium.
Where was I?
I'm sure I was at home with my folks.
You don't even remember.
Where was I? Oh, playing songs on my guitar.
I don't know where else I would have been. I mean, you know. At home in the living room.
You would have been like,
on TV.
You would have been like 16 years old or something.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I think I had my first drink then.
That was 2 years before I graduated high school.
Oh, my God. Am I the only one who has an actual millennium story? Good Lord.
Go.
Do you have one?
Well, yeah. Eric remembers seeing... Eric's older. How old? Eric's old enough
33.
To have it. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So Eric was a human being when the millennium.
I was at a party with friends, but there was nothing terribly... eventful that went on.
I was at the foot.
The world didn't end, and we were happy about that.
From where I stood, I wasn't really sure. I was at the foot of the Victory Monument, the Siegessäule in Berlin, Germany, in the middle of a crowd of Germans, and I thought I was going to die. I thought I was going to be suffocated and crushed to death by the crowd. And
involuntary mosh pit.
Yeah, it was the most awesome thing I've ever been a part of. And they're launching fireworks, and everyone in Germany had their own handheld rockets. And
pretty much.
I'm not the first American to go, where did the Germans get all those rockets from? just more recent than some others. And literally, like, they were all launching them at the Victory Monument, and they were pinging off the Victory Monument and caroming through the crowd and like sizzling over your head. And I was like, wow, this is a millennium party, man. It's about the only time in movie history when the Bonaventure actually kind of served the purpose it was meant to serve, where it looks futuristic enough.
The Bonaventure?
The Bonaventure. That's what the hotel is. Hotel in downtown L.A. that's been the go-to future for like 30 years in movies and television, especially on the inside because it's all curves on the inside and very, 70s modern high tech. But it was in every sci-fi television show. It was in Buck Rogers. It was in everything. It's like the future, this big circular glass building. Which
Hotel
is
of tomorrow.
Yeah, so.
Today.
But it actually works in this movie for a change because it's like the faux future. The future we were promised that never actually came.
Oh, Ray Fiennes, figure out the plot, man.
Yeah, he still hasn't figured out the plot.
So the guy who she goes to and ultimately gives it to and who does watch it, we were introduced to him earlier when he was going into the hotel.
Right.
Right. When he picked up the happy go lucky Chinese guy.
Yeah, and how did we set him up?
He's the deputy police commissioner.
And that's pretty much all we got out of it.
Well, he's the guy who busted Ralph Fiennes, who kicked him out of the force for whatever thing he did. Which I don't know if they ever even specify, but
because they both seem convinced that he's kind of, he's at least not corrupt, I guess.
Yeah, that's that's Lenny's point. Is if there's any cop who isn't corrupt, he's the one.
Yeah.
So
just getting him to watch it. And Angela Bassett could have better. He's like, sir, you've got to watch this. Yeah. Like, okay, wait. Start over, honey.
You need to see this. She does accost him in the men's room, though, so it seems like it's important.
It would get your attention, wouldn't it?
It certainly would get your attention. It's shocking that it doesn't get her thrown in handcuffs immediately.
Thinking about the movie that you walked out of, turned around. Angela Bassett. Okay. Well, about five or six things I would have guessed I was going to see.
Yeah.
You're not in the first 2,000 maybe or so. I have no idea what you're doing here. Security.
But what's love got to do with it? All right. Tell me. How did you get your groove back?
I'm in the bathroom washing my hands next to the old guy, and she busts in. She's like, there's something you have to see. I'd be like, oh, I'll leave you two alone.
Yeah, that's right.
You want me to lock the door on the way out?
But I don't have to see it, right? Because I just met you, so I can go. I'm free to go. Okay.
I'm not really into that wrong kind of threesome. You know?
I was turned into a cow. Can I go? Yes, you can go. Anyone else? No, fuck it.
Yeah. I got better.
Seeing these. He's wearing a cummerbund, right? And, yeah. You know. When you can't see, it just blends into the pants. I just keep thinking he's got the old man, like, hiked up over his navel.
Goes up to his breastbone.
Yeah.
Well, in the old days, they didn't have hats and pants.
Yeah.
So they made them both.
You had to wear one that was one thing. So, yeah, this is the Bonaventure. It's got your exterior, you know, cool glass elevators and stuff. Because it's the future! Bonaventure used to be, like, the place to go when I first got here. First, I was shocked that the Bonaventure existed in real life, you know, because, like, oh, my God, it's real. I'm totally there. But the, you know, going for drinks at the Bonaventure was kind of a thing that you could go do. Because there's a restaurant on the top that, you know, rotates and all that sort of stuff.
Mm. I want to eat in a rotating restaurant. I gotta
it's
go to
awesome.
Vegas again.
It's the future.
The future.
You've never eaten while drunk? It's kind of the same thing.
Wah, wah.
Not a joke.
So he's going to, third time's the charm, except he's not going to use charm this time. He's like, on second thought, no, just going to beat the shit out of the guy.
Does a good job.
Straight for the nuts.
Yeah.
Damn, that is a cooler jacket than I could pull off.
That is. Both of them wearing cool jackets now. And Lenny's all tailored now.
God, this movie should be called Cool Jackets.
Full cool jackets.
It was like a Michael Bay shot of this. Of these guys playing the bagpipes. It was just like orbiting around behind them.
A Steadicam guy at a full gallop. Running in a circle.
Dude.
Bagpipes! If I told you I have a cool movie and I need a shot of bagpipes, that's your first shot. You're like,
the only
we're going to need a Steadicam and some crack.
The only thing that would have made that better would be like a lens flare.
There is only one way to shoot bagpipes cool, and that was it.
Yep.
Enjoy the party.
Yeah. She's like, okay, you got a gun.
Got a gun, I see. Aren't you the badass?
Tigers are playing tonight. My God, she's buffed out for this movie. Go, Angela.
I feel bad for the
mime that
the mime features in later. The mime gets a big featured moment at midnight. He gets his own
gets
little
up
moment.
And dances on the hood of
the
car. Yeah.
It's like, okay, dude, yeah, we get it.
So who was that? Who is he related to? That's what I want to know.
Whose friend is he? What does he symbolize?
I've totally been that guy at a party.
Yeah.
I've been the mime that couldn't not follow people around and just kind of go make faces behind him. Makeup does that to you.
All right, so here you got to strap in, because after we have this, pardon the expression.
Yeah.
But first of all, first we have to watch, you know, that's going to be twisted on its head.
And then we get info dumped.
The most amazing monologue in movie history that I have to say doesn't bother me. It didn't bother me then, doesn't bother me now. I may be alone in that, but the fact that, you know, somehow.
Well, around the room watching this the first time, who was suspecting Tom Sizemore? I mean,
me.
I was not. My hand is up because I was demonstrating.
I wasn't because I didn't know to suspect him in 95. He wasn't Tom Sizemore yet.
Yeah. I just figured it just seemed predictable that the best friend would be the bad guy. That might have been something that, having watched movies since this, had something to do with, but I don't think so. I think that was a thing then, too. But as soon as he showed Tom Sizemore the rape video and he got out and he was like, oh, fucked up, I was like, I think you're the third act guy.
It is kind of a cliche.
It wasn't that I got clues. It was just that it's the cliche. It's that the best friend is going to turn on you. Mm. Et tu, Brutus?
We've got the death guy also. There's a death guy and a mime. He's not a death guy.
He's a baby.
He's the old year and the new year.
There's a Grim Reaper with a baby.
Yeah.
Grim Reaper from Oklahoma.
Old year, new year.
Had their Peter Jackson lens on for that shot a minute ago.
Like, Uh-oh. Now, this is, again, not knowing, you know, the next twist that's coming down the pike. This is why you go, oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no, no, no. And it plays it out for quite some time, too.
Mm-hmm. But it does, don't give away too much, either.
But it does throw you the next curve, which is like, wait, it's someone she knows.
Yeah.
So you're running it down your head.
What if you... All right, I'm gonna just override this with a comic book.
Yeah, please, because this is gonna go on for a while.
So he goes, he gets this chick. He's like, all right, we're gonna do this, and then looks up and there's like a full like wall to wall like floor to ceiling mirror right there, and he goes, oh shit! It's like crap, I can't use this. And he's like, all right, well, do I still do this or do we need to go somewhere? Or I'll just take her in my car. We'll go somewhere without mirrors.
I should have put the mask on.
Damn, I really should have scoped this out beforehand. I should have had a scouting session.
Yeah, we should have rehearsed this. So like I said, here's the little irony is, you know, he is getting to sleep with her one last time, kind of.
No.
That doesn't take the sting out of it at all?
And he was always curious about the, you know, the choking. And so now he knows.
Yeah. That was it. Is that the hidden thing? He never got to actually have the auto-asphyxia <Yeah. laughs> session with her. So this is another, you know, milking it, and it's a risk as, you know, as a filmmaker. It's like you're kind of risking it, like, okay, he didn't even watch to the end because he couldn't stand it anymore. Fine.
Yeah.
And oh my God, is it this okay? And wait, what? And you're like, well, now I'm all confused.
Yeah.
So wait. Now I don't know what's happening. Mm-hmm. So then the damnable thing is he has to go back and put the thing on and watch the rest of it. Like, okay, yeah, wait, what did I miss? How did that end? I think I'm confused now. I really don't know what I'm doing. It's like the forgetting the clip times two. Like, okay, I guess I have to watch more.
At least it picks up where it left off. He doesn't have to go through the whole beginning.
Yeah, he does have a chapter search.
chapter three.
It does fast forward.
Well, there's two more chapters. Okay,
we saw
good.
Them fast forward before.
Yeah.
But once again, it's like, you know, when you put this in a movie, there are just automatically going to be people who go, well, no, this is bad and wrong serious and not worth taking and it's trash and evil. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can only imagine what the, you know, Catholic Council thought of this movie. Much less the ratings board, but
I think the best thing about it is how everyone who's watching it plays it as just being is just living through this horrific thing, which is like it's not
exploitation.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's
is that your argument?
No, yeah. It's just
it's not
for those people. That's you know, so that's what's making it not.
You
okay,
say there's not one
really,
person who puts it on and goes, "All right, hey,
that was kind of nice." I mean, it was, you know.
It wasn't bad.
Yeah. There's a really terrible old joke that kind of goes that way. It's the courtroom scene. Where it's like, all right, and then the defendant came into your room and he threw you against the wall and he said something to you. Yes. What did he say? I can't repeat it. I can't say it out loud. It's too disgusting. He goes, well, can write it down on a piece of paper. Writes it down on a piece of paper and shows it to the judge, shows it to the prosecutor, shows it, okay, let the jury see. And so they pass it down from one jury person down to the next one, But the last jury guy is not really paying attention. And the woman next to him nudges him, hands him a piece of paper. He goes, yeah, later, yeah. Terrible, terrible joke. So,
awesome.
So she's taking this kind of blasé, like, oh, well, no, come on. Hey, he's my meal ticket. Really? Do you have to do this? Oh, gosh.
Been there.
Just why do you have to kill everybody all the time? You're no fun. I worry about Michael Wincott in this. I really hope that this is a rubber gun.
I was going to
say, I'm really concerned for his teeth.
For his teeth.
I mean, Jesus. I wouldn't resist either if I were him as an actor. Now, there's one thing here that I just have a small... I guess the thing is frying your brain so hard that you aren't capable of conscious thought. But it's like, both of his hands are free... So reach up and pull that thing off your head.
Well, yeah. That's
my thought.
You see in a second, he goes for the arm
he's
in
trying
front
to pull
of him,
his
but he doesn't go
yeah,
for the...
It's like, he even reaches up and touches it, but then doesn't...
Yeah.
So I'm going to retcon it for the movie and Uh-oh. Say that it makes your brain so fried that you're not really consciously thinking.
Yeah. And then rack focus.
Yeah. And there he is. With a casual look, with a tie. Very nice. Now, here's where the movie gets all... And usually, when a movie gets this directory, which is which is director hyphen Y, not like a directory, like Google. Mm-hmm. But the movie gets all directory on me. But it works here.
Yeah.
You know, because it really is... They have this lengthy...
Well, exactly.
Tragic dialogue scene that they got to do something with.
In the chat, absolutely. Yeah.
John Pavlich asks a cool sci-fi question. He prefaces, he says, this is a dark, controversial question, but if a guy thinking about rape, or a guy who would be one to rape, put the tech on and experienced it, would that be good enough and then no more rapes?
No.
No?
No way.
How do you know?
I'm just saying, like, yeah. because...
I want to hear the follow-up to that one.
Well, I'm just... You know, I'm figuring that the people who do that kind of stuff, it's not about, oh, I want just the experience of doing that. They want to actually be doing it, you know. That would, you know.
Sorry, was it being brought up as a substitute or as... okay.
Rape methadone.
Well, isn't that the argument?
I thought you were talking about, like, have them experience what it's like to be raped.
No.
Yeah.
As a corrective thing.
Oh,
but so, I like where you're headed with that one. Yeah. But that's the argument that still has always been ongoing. It's like, well, porn leads to people being more sexually, you know, perverted. It's like, or does it alleviate their sexual perversion? Yeah. You know, does it satisfy the need or does it increase the need?
I think that totally depends on the person.
It totally depends on the person. If someone's, you know, if someone's got the silly straw gene, then they do, you know.
the silly straw gene.
Now, do you guys know why this scene is edited this way? It's very choppy. There's a lot of, like, little...
Like I said, I think it's to keep
interesting
what is basically a gigantic monologue.
That's exactly
explaining
right.
the whole plot in one big exposition dump.
Yeah.
You need to do, because you've just said, okay, the entire plot, basically what you thought the entire movie about, total red herring, never actually happened. Here's what really was all happening. And he literally is connecting all the dots that you thought were already connected and saying, no, that guy totally randomly did this. That had nothing to do with the other thing. It's all just me wanting to fuck your ex-girlfriend and killing people. That's what's been going on.
You definitely got to find an interesting way to show it, because it's mostly two guys in a room, one guy talking at another guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only partially a conversation even. So
yeah, it's the most massive,
creative then, you know?
Most massive monologue in movie history. You know?
Yeah.
And then they could, you know, it's like you do, you know, keeps cutting back to like, remember when I showed you this? That was total misdirection. Remember when I did this? That wasn't it.
Mm-hmm. We were talking with Michael Dorkman Scott before he left, and he gave us some parting thoughts on the movie. And he said, you know, he kind of suspected Sizemore actually early on just because he had one of those crazy wigs that looks like he could have one of the recording things under. And that was how he was thinking ahead on it.
Well, it's got a good blend up there on the forehead. You know,
yep.
Looks much better
some
than the
Some scenes are
wig.
Better than others. I've kind of had my eyes on it. There are certain ones where it's a little sketchy.
So I like I said, I this movie earns my endless respect because in the end the vast conspiracy never existed. Mm-hmm. You know. And it totally okie doked you into believing it because you always believe it in a movie. Like, yeah, conspiracy.
Someday I'll be directing and editing a movie and I'll have a scene where everything gets explained and I'll agonize over showing replaying flash cuts of the beginning of the movie.
It seems like such a cheat, but boy, sometimes you just, you know, there's no other way.
Because I never thought about it.
I object to it on moral grounds myself.
Yeah.
But I can see how you really kind of have to have it.
Frank has a good line in the chat room. He says, when you can tell earlier in the film that the wig is clearly a wig and not his real hair, that's his forehead shadowing.
Wah, wah.
Very nice.
Yes. Good pun, sir. Good pun.
Well done.
Well played.
Everyone kind of wanted to go, oh, but we all went, Yeah.
He who would pun would pick
so
a pocket.
So we don't really exactly understand her change of heart she has.
Yeah, she's a tough one to read. Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, so really, you had the record producer.
this guy.
So I guess she legitimately loves him. I guess that's the idea. She literally legitimately loves him, which is good because then there's hope for all of us. In that sense. I mean, there is that, you know, Rick Ocasek thing where you kind of go, oh, well, if he can get a supermodel, then I could. So there's that.
I mean, I guess really all she's doing is trying to not let him die. I mean, she's not, like, instigating a fight. She's just, don't shoot him. But then it is a fight
Yeah.
Pretty quickly.
Now, this fight, again, finally, you know, there's some brutality that we're used to seeing. Because this fight is nasty. And great because...
Oh, and yeah, this is great.
You know, it's great because it's not like, you know, two guys who were suddenly turning into Jackie Chan. This is just a brawl.
Yeah.
and you know, great. So rarely
breaking
do you,
stuff.
Yeah. And the bit with the glass table is the nastiest one coming up here. But...
Yeah.
But the fact that, you know, that these guys are just like... Just thrashing, and that's all it is. There's no finesse to it at all. I enjoy that.
It does it being very. I mean, the performances too are really. I mean, they're really trying to grab each other, and they're really into it. And then it's very visceral. You know, it's not about choreography. You know. Yeah.
And then you go, oh, that's Tom Sizemore. Yeah, now I recognize
him. Oh, there he is.
Hey, that was Tom. It was Tom Sizemore all along. I had no idea.
I always was kind of trying to figure out exactly where he stabbed him in the back for it to not. He doesn't seem
not
to be too effective.
That's the nastiest there. Ooh, on the edge of the glass coffee table. Ah, slice the arm.
Yep.
Nasty. Like where he got stabbed in the back where he's not completely incapacitated?
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought it was in his shoulder, but it's kind of central, but it's clearly not his spine. Yeah. You know? It doesn't seem to bother him too much, aside from being painful. He could still use his arms.
Well, we've referenced that in some other commentary. In another commentary, there's the cracked article, which was the five wounds that Hollywood thinks is trivial that are actually fatal.
Oh, sure.
Is a great...
Oh, if you ever get knocked out in real life,
exactly,
that's a bad thing.
Yeah, it's a great article. And primary is, if you get knocked out and you're out for more than 4 seconds, go to a hospital because you've had major brain trauma.
Yep.
So, you know, the whole idea of Marty McFly wakes up hours later. No, he's dead.
You're not okay.
If he was knocked unconscious for hours, he's dead.
Oh. And then here we come with the tie.
And the payoff of the tie at last.
So you get the payoff of the knife on the mantle.
Yeah.
Brief effects thing coming up. There's, of course, the shot that they always have in these situations like this, where actually there's a better one here. Now this. The clients always want the backgrounds in focus.
Yeah.
They always want to see what they're paying for out there, way beyond the guy in the foreground.
No matter how much you say, but it wouldn't be in focus.
It would be totally soft focus. Come on.
There was a rack focus on that shot, and the background went out of focus with it. So that was
cool.
And
that was good, but they had to. That was an unrelated statement to yours. Yeah.
It looks tricky.
Yeah.
So
reminds me very much of Die Hard.
Doing a waterfall by the Bonaventure.
Yeah, at the beginning of that, you can kind of see the wire.
You see the wire, yeah. But at least it's up, and you can see it there. You can actually see it fall off there. Mm-hmm. But,
good stuff.
See, because wire removal, as much as it seems easy today, 95, you go, do we really need it?
That's a pain.
He's like, yeah, I'm done with you.
Pulling the knife out of his own back and cutting his tie, though.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Now, is that the end of his arc? I mean, to me, that's the end of his arc. He goes, you know, because he was all like, you know, all concerned about his fashion. But no, I'm going to actually sacrifice my tie. That's his character arc, is he's willing to lose a tie over this.
General tie.
Yeah. He will miss the tie.
It's like fried green tomatoes.
Now the thing is, this is why the movie is 2 hours and 20 minutes long. It's not even close to over yet because there's a whole other. Sure. It's like, okay, this is about where you go, oh, wait a minute. So those cops. Wait, those cops are still out there. There's no conspiracy. Yep. That hasn't been ended. That hasn't been fixed. There's still crazy cops trying to kill us. Just because they're trying to kill us. So how do we deal with
at
that?
At this point, they're just trying to cover
their asses.
Cover their own. Yeah.
And they really get – and this is where they really kind of get, okay, how are they going to talk their way out of this one? This is where
they start opening fire and
shooting random passersby.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like yet another – it's like, okay, there's going to be paperwork on this.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to justify this. And I'm not sure they're really thinking this one through. Unless we want to go with the kind of the movie logic of, no, cops can kill as many people as they want and never have to fill out a report or anything on it. Or they don't get suspended while it gets investigated. That never actually happens.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I'm just start wasting people in the street.
Yeah.
I think he's kind of gone around the bend.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really. Boom! As are these people who are walking into the bathroom,
running
gunshots.
Oh no! I gotta get out.
Oh, there goes the lady running by, and there seems to be a guy perforated. Damn it! This is a sucky party. Now again, one of the great things about it, though, gotta give him credit, is she wins. Is that she takes both these guys down?
Yeah,
she takes them both down, and it takes the entire National Guard to bring her down. To which you have to say, "You go." You go, Angela Bassett.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Being tased is an experience I hope I never have.
Oh. Well, there goes your birthday surprise.
Yeah.
Hey, Ryan. Brink.
Gotcha.
How would you like to be playback of being tased? Wouldn't that just be like being tased?
In the chat room, Pavlich says, this cop shooting all these people to cover up his murder is like fucking for virginity.
Exactly. Ooh. Dancing for architecture. So, yeah. But the fact that, look, she's like, okay, all right. Well, you guys weren't so tough. I don't know what I was so afraid of all that time.
I was, and it's a little hamish, but I was genuinely moved here in a second when they all start beating on her and then the crowd retaliates.
Yeah.
I was, you know, it's okay, movie, fine, do this to me.
They should have cut in that scene from Spider-Man. Where is
it
that?
Does. Here's
you
your
mess with one of us, you mess with all of us.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. I do like where the scene goes because, yeah, it's a little bit of the, you know, yeah, Angelino's pulling together is not quite that. But the fact that she sees that and she sees, and as you're watching it, you're going, my God, is it just going to go? Is it all going to happen now?
It's happening in a different way.
Is this going to, like, it's all going to get touched off and the whole city's going to go and it's going to be over? You know? And the fact that she's seeing that and realizing that that might be what happens.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it kind of happens just
It happens, but then it calms back down. Instead of torching off and becoming global, it cools off again. But just barely. And
now, I didn't get the idea that this kid that's about to jump on the cop is her son. Because I don't feel like her kid...
I don't think that's implied.
I don't feel like her kid would wait.
Yeah.
Or is he even there? I mean,
he's not there. They left him back at Aunt Cecile's or wherever they were. So it's just a kid who just goes, no, stop that.
Yeah, different kid. Just some kid.
Do it! Yeah!
And there you go.
Get him, kid.
And then everyone was like, well, the kid's doing it. Well, wait, no. We gotta get in on this.
And that's where you go, oh, the cops are fucked.
Yeah, exactly. There's a scene coming up where the guy's like holding up the helmet like it's a skull. But
now, racist or not, this is the Return of the Jedi. Look at the black Ewoks attacking the stormtroopers. Look at that.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, really? Well, defend the analogy. You're talking about a primitive zero technology culture. Is that the analogy you're making?
Racist or not?
Somewhere in North Hollywood, Dorkman just shivered.
Yeah. You're the arbiter of all things, whether they're racist or not. So, yes. Yeah,
he's holding up the helmet.
Yeah, here she is like, you know, my God, it's, oh, shit, it's going to happen. You know, it's all going to. But then it just all kind of comes. It kind of comes down because then the riot squad literally comes in and does what, you know, you would think the riot squad would not inspire people to do, which is to calm down.
The crazy thing is, like, you know, this is so many people with so much action, and there's a confetti guy, and
the confetti guys are working overtime.
And
look,
this is like collectively 20 minutes of the movie. This is not a day of shooting. This is weeks.
It's, I'm just blown away by how much, you know. How much effort there was. And, you know, and I lived here at the time, and I never even knew this movie existed. It's like, had I known, I would have been downtown every night going, are you kidding me? I got to be in on this. So there we go. Art school. Director went to art school. There you go. But there we go. And this is almost a Deus Ex Machina, except for the fact that it has been set up. But literally, this guy isn't God stepping in and going,
that's
all right,
true.
you go to jail, you go hospital, movie's over. Finally, it's over.
And then they manage to give you the satisfying conclusion, which is that they do the thing. They're like, ah! They have to get shot.
It's
up
the lethal weapon conclusion. It's the, you're going to jail. No, that's not good enough. He has to die.
Yeah, exactly.
We want to see him executed instead. Mm-hmm. So sure enough. Now, Fichtner, of course, again, got through this entire movie without saying more than four words. But it's like Fichtner gets his last little moment. Like, I think he makes the right call. I mean, I think Fichtner sums it up. And anyway. But D'Onofrio will not let it go, man.
When your face is splattered with your friend's blood, you make all kinds of crazy decisions.
Just, you don't really think things through at that point.
As you're dragging his body behind you.
It's an amazing image. It's an amazing image, though.
Absolutely.
Just dragging his corpse by his handcuffs.
Yeah, take that, Die Hard. You know, it's like that's so much far more than a ballet dancer covered with a blanket.
It's like he didn't want to actually put the gun in his mouth, which is interesting.
I wouldn't either.
I don't want to taste it.
Yeah, no. It's not the rubber one that the other guy had.
Right, yeah.
Now, so here we go, like, oh, this, wait, no.
Yeah, here you go.
So this, if anything, is like shows Lenny's growth, it's this, because he's not going to fight him, but at least he's going to cover Angela Bassett. He's like, okay, I'm going to block for you. I will take the bullet. That's all I got. Mm-hmm. That's all
shoot
I got
him
left.
In the head. Yeah. Shoot him in the head.
I like how he has the gun and they're moving and they're like, should we shoot him?
Yeah. Do you think? I don't know. So? He might look. He looks like he could be reasoned with.
He might be all right.
He could be.
I want to see where he's going with this.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. He's picked up the gun. Now, every one of these cops has better be sure of their aim, because otherwise they're going to start killing bystanders, too.
Right.
Well, who didn't see that coming?
They should make a movie of this.
Yeah. Best party ever.
Happy New Year.
So much confetti.
I know. Huge confetti.
Think about day and night. Just
it's not just confetti. Oh, it's these. Night, it's. Night. I mean, it's a smart choice because that those big circles are so much easier to clean than real confetti would have been. Because
mm-hmm.
that stuff gets in everything. This they probably like sweeping it all up and throwing it back down on you.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Hey, there's gravel in that. What the hell?
I would assume
there's gravel and cigarette butts that you're throwing down on me. Jacket on to go to jail in.
At least she's wearing clothes.
Yeah, that's true. She could have been wearing that thing made out of soda pop tops.
She got like the same wound on her forehead that guy from Twister did when the hubcap hit him in the head. just a little Siler cut slice. On her forehead. Oh, now she's cool. Oh, the guy's fixing it. All right. Yeah. I'll allow
and
him.
He's been stabbed in the back. See, there's the mime. I'm a mime! Hey, I'm a mime. Check me out.
Victory. Mime victory.
Shoot him. Shoot him in the head.
Zion, the war is over.
See, there's a clear shot. No bystanders would be involved.
Sure.
You know. Just like, there's like
if a mime falls in a party, does anyone hear it?
There's a gunshot in the distance, and all the National Guard guys are like, what? What? No.
Didn't Nobody saw shit.
Yeah, you didn't see nothing.
That's L.A., motherfucker.
So the movie has this final – there's this little image here of the National Guardsmen. See, that's so sweet. But the movie has this final thing of,
wow.
Like, in the end, people are just – girls just want to have fun. You know, it's like, oh, people are okay, and it's a new year, and, you know, it's – and there's a Goodyear product placement. But, you know, it's
– and a product placement for 2000.
This
movie paid for
this
by
sense 2000. Of like finally for the first time in the whole movie you're sort of seeing people just kind of being nice and pleasant to each other.
Yeah,
you know it's and as she says, you know, we made it. That's the whole moral of the movie is if you just live through it.
Yeah, I mean, I was gonna save this for my wrap up, but I mean, when this finished, I'm like, okay, cool, but I feel like what they were doing was leading up to them sort of changing the world in some way.
Yeah.
Like, especially because of the whole, like, they're all ready to set off this powder keg of
racial tension.
And that didn't really happen. They came close a couple times. And they basically just sort of, yeah, they solved the murder of that asshole, and they killed that record label guy, and that was, you know, cool, because he was a douchebag. But, you know, ultimately kind of just, yeah, stuff's the same. These people did a thing. And, you know, it's good. The story is fine. It's wrapped up. I was just kind of thinking that it was going to go bigger at the end.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, they kept that powder keg from going off. They, you know, potentially, you know, saved the lives of thousands of people. I mean, they didn't change the world in a way that, like, okay, we did this and then, you know, things changed in terms of politics or race relations or whatever. But they avoided a disaster. I mean, they did... you know, make a pretty significant contribution.
Now, as for Who Killed Jericho 1,
that's yeah.
That tape is probably going to become a thing.
Well, it's in the hands of the police, so police are, you know, the police don't have to show that to nobody because I wouldn't if I was them.
Right, right.
And I think that's the issue is I think that's maybe another explanation why this movie didn't, you know, get beloved is because in the end it was kind of like it's sort of like. The message of the movie is like, yeah, it's a tough old world, you know.
Yeah,
it's tough, and you know, and two crazy people's problems don't amount to a hill of beans. They actually don't. They really don't.
Yeah,
and you know, the moral of the story is if you live through it, you won. You know, that's kind of the idea. It's a big old crazy world, and you're not going to save it, and you're not going to make everything okay, and you're not going to make it all wonderful. It's just sort of like you just tomorrow's another day, and get up and keep swinging, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, people don't necessarily go to the movies for that message.
I think it still has kind of the uplifting, you know, second chance thing. I mean, you know, they both came out on the other side of a really, you know, dark ride with the possibilities of when I mean of being together and all that stuff. I mean, you have kind of some romantic resolution.
And it's not like you know she didn't win an Oscar 15 years later for a movie that has just as downer an ending as this one does, you know, and just as like the more things change, the more they care for it 15 years later. Mm-hmm. So you know,
anyway, I love this movie. I have a lot of fun with it. I would almost rather have watched it than talked about it. It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I at least found it. If haven't, you know, grown up with it, I'm glad I at least know about it now, because it is cool and it is a recommendation, especially if you're into rape. Ryan.
Segue. I think it is well built enough that, you know, there are certainly moments in this commentary where we were kind of struggling a little bit. And that's a common problem that we have here on Down in Front. Is so good. It's kind of like, well, what is there to say about, you know, ask, why aren't you doing Back to the Future? It's like, well, can I kind of work up some.
We get 8 minutes into Back to the Future, and then we just start watching Back to the Future.
Yeah. So, you know, James Cameron, awesome idea. Bigelow, lovely movie. I think it was really good. I was pleasantly surprised by seeing it. I recommend everybody check it out. So hopefully by the time, if you're listening to me say this, that you have checked it out.
You've watched it twice by now.
So, yeah.
Eric Webb.
I mean, I found myself, watching way too much, but, because it had been a few years and was,
it's an interesting movie. Fuck it.
I just was reminded of how much I love the film. It is a really great dark ride, with some really, compromised, flawed characters with screwed up agendas. And that's the thing too, you know, the conspiracy's bullshit. It all comes down to, you know, people and their own kind of selfish agendas and how those balance out. And but fantastic. Well, I think it holds up. Like, even though some of the ideas are obviously of the time, like, we, you know, LA isn't a place that you feel like, I think, is on the precipice of, you know, going over the edge these days. But I think it's a solid sci-fi film in all the ways that sci-fi can be awesome without being like overtly full of like lasers and you know,
One spaceship in the whole thing,
right? But big ideas you know are at play and you know, so yeah, I think it's great.
Trey,
it's one of those movies where, you know, I'm very grateful that, I guess, if you're Jim Cameron, you can convince a major studio to spend way too much money on a movie that can't possibly be a hit. It's like going in. Yeah. It's just like, this movie cannot be a hit. I'm sorry. It won't be a hit. But it's so great that he managed to get $40 million out of his studio so we could have this movie, mm-hmm. which I'm sure they're still in the red on. You know, it's like, this movie can't possibly have made its money back. $40 million and $8 million at the box office when it was released. So
That's why Jim had someone else make it.
Yeah. Yeah.
He had to keep his cred.
Yeah. Hey, I'll give my ex-wife.
Here, Katie, you can make this.
Yeah. So, you know, but it's one of those movies. It's like, damn it. It's like, it should have been a hit because people should be okay with seeing movies like this, you know, and maybe it did better overseas. I mean, this is the kind of movie that, you know, again,
the French would love this.
They don't need, you know, American happy ending Hollywood bullshit as much to be successful. So maybe this, you know, maybe it did make its money back when you add it all up. But I'm just so glad we have it. And it's a movie that, you know, the movie that's so uncompromisingly, no, this is the fucking movie, bastards. Mm-hmm. This is it. You don't get a easy happy ending. You don't get an easy ride. It's going to be, you know, you're going to have to work to get through this movie. And if you don't, screw it. I'm going to send Angela Bassett to your house, punch you in the head.
And you're going to have to work to get through Down in Front. You can always find more episodes at downinfront.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Get a brand new episode every single week. Facebook.com/downinfrontshow. Twitter.com/downinfront. downinfrontshow@gmail.com. You can buy this movie from us at the Amazon store on downinfront.net. And we get a buck. You can buy our t-shirts. You can involve yourself in the conversation at downinfront.net/forum, where every week we announce doing a live chat at downinfront.net/live, where you can actually involve yourself in the commentary, such as named all day, have done. Also, Matt. Anyway, Matt Fedeveda, chapter breaks and show notes on iTunes, and Holden Hill designed and maintained the website. Holden Hill also made the Android app, which is available on the Android Marketplace. iPhone app coming soon. And until next time, my name is Steve Christie, Ryan Weaver,
Eric Webb,
and this has been Down in Front. Thank you very much for listening. There's a reason memories fade.
They're designed that way.
So have you had the conversation, why isn't it Ralph Fiennes?
Why isn't it Ralph Fiennes?
It just because it isn't.
It's a British thing.
That's why it's...
I'm just going to make up a whole different like pronunciation of my name, even though it's a commonly used name.
You're Rain Weaver.
With the same spelling.
Rain. Rion.
You're Rion
Rain,
Weaver.
Yeah.
It's pronounced Rain.
Fuck you. I'm
there you go.
Rain.
I think that's good.
You're Rain Weaver Rain. From San Rafael, California.
And indignantly. It's like, so you're Rion Weaver? It's pronounced Rain.
It's Rain, actually.
Yeah.